Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. You know, I always wonder what I've forgotten. You know, when I start a show, especially on a Monday, and I'm thinking, oh, there's always something here. So I'm shuffling through my notes and things like that. And I forgot to activate the Skype line. So I'm going to, although I don't think we need to do that. Actually, I think we got, when John Cullen called in last week via Skype, I think that he was put right through. So I don't know if I need to do that. I have those things I'll get to. So we're getting organized. We're getting ready to go. Gene's here. And it's another exciting adventure, as Lumba used to say, another exciting adventure in broadcast. He said broadcast excellence. I'll just call this broadcast adventure. Because for us, this is an adventure. This is new. This is different. This is wild. This is crazy. We are, you know, fortunate to in this particular time in history when so many things have already been discovered and so many things have already been done, and people think, what's left to discover? Well, they thought about that in the 1800s, too. And, you know, look what happened, you know, the airplane, the car, the computer, you know, going to the moon, all these different things have happened. So there's always new discoveries. And in this particular case, the new discovery is Action Radio, the ability of anybody to write a bill for a law that they consent to be governed by that could end up as, you know, federal law, state law, local ordinance. We don't know. We have a bunch of things that are going. And so the title of the show this morning really relates to one of those laws that I wrote with David Jones, who is of Santa Rosa Volunteers, main sponsor of the show at this time. And like I said, looking for more so we can expand, we can market, we can do all those things that the huge corporations do without being a huge unresponsive, you know, corporation that treats you like an idiot, you know, thinks you only have a 2 minute at best attention span, because we know it's a lot more than that. But I also recognize too that, you know, nobody should be sitting around for 3 hours with nothing else to do but listen to Action Radio. So it's in segments, you know, it's audio, so you can listen to it. You don't have to watch anything. And so I just really like the radio format because it goes straight to your brain. We sort of bypass all your visual limitations and go straight into the thought process. So the title of the show today, Robin Hood Immigration, Asset Seizure from Illegals to Americans. It's probably a little misleading because I'm not talking about asset seizure of American stuff. It's a transfer. So as you all know, Robin Hood, who took from the government taxes and gave the taxes back to the people. Robin Hood did not rob the rich and give to the poor. That's absolutely insane. That's a modern leftist progressive misconception of the entire concept of Robin Hood. Robin Hood literally robbed the government of what money that the government had stolen from the people in confiscatory taxes, and he gave the taxes back. Okay, so what we're trying to do with Robin Hood immigration, even though it's not immigration, but for convenience, I use that term, is to seize assets that illegal aliens have no right to because they have no right to be here, and restoring those that money through tax, you know, pay money to American taxpayers. So that's what we do here in our bill, which I'm going to go over here in a little bit, on the illegal alien free zone here in Santa Rosa County. Now, I've been trying to inspire the local Republican groups, any kind of other citizen groups, to get, and the county commissioners of Santa Rosa themselves to get behind this, and we're running into some roadblocks. And I'm thinking, you know, talking to David about this, and we're sort of trying to brainstorm, is this that they you know, we can't imagine they actually want illegal aliens here. So if they don't want illegal aliens here and they don't want this bill that will stop illegal aliens from being here, because it gives the county the power, which they already have, by the way. This is more of an alert than it is an actual ordinance, because they can take the property of illegal aliens anytime they want. They haven't and they don't because they're not thinking of it. So a lot of times legislation that we write is not necessarily designed to change laws so much as, in this case, you know, change thinking, because they already have the power to seize any ill-gotten gains as a part of a criminal enterprise. Well, illegal aliens are, you know, every bit a criminal enterprise, a criminal family enterprise is a mafia family. You know, I mean, what's the difference? Basically, illegal aliens are organized crime, and they have government complicity in that organized crime. Look at the State Department. State Department has a whole department on resettling. We'll go over this later in the show, too. The State Department has an entire department on what they are calling resettling. In other words, transferring illegal Afghan aliens, you know, goat herders with five-year-old wives. You know, I know it's disgusting. I said that for a reason. I want you to think it's disgusting. But these people are being transferred here And that's the main goal. And there's still Americans in Afghanistan after the Biden surrender. Now, thank God people are starting to call it the surrender. I heard Ted Cruz use it. I heard Mike Pompeo use it. But they're actually using the word surrender because that's what it is. So critical language is critical. So let's talk about this for a second. So Robinhood, I can say back to one of my favorite movies of all time. If you haven't seen the Errol Flynn version of Robinhood, you have to watch it. Let me bring let's drag in conversation. I don't know how many movies she has. We'll find out in a bit here when she's gotten everything all organized here. But do you ever see the original Robin Hood with Errol Flynn, Alan Hale Sr., that's the skipper's dad on Gilligan, Olivia de Havilland, Basil Rathbone, Nigel something or other, these fabulous old actors that classic Hollywood film. Did you ever see the original Robin Hood? Well, it's not the original, but did you ever see the Errol Flynn version of Robin Hood?
I did not. No.
Oh, you need to. You really need to. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's great. Now, modern day, they have Kevin Costner and who's the there's another guy, the Australian actor, Russell Crowe. I think he did Robin Hood, too. And nice misinterpretations. But, if you want to see one of the best ones, and it's completely off the story. It probably has very little to do with the story other than they wore green. That's probably the only resemblance to the actual Robin Hood story. But it's just a fabulous film. Back when times were very different. And, of course, Errol Flynn's an Australian actor, so it's interesting. A lot of actors come here from different countries to make it big. But the point is that Robin Hood, have you heard that before, Jing? Or, you still have the thought in your head that Robin Hood stole from the rich and gave to the poor, which is, like I say, progressive nonsense.
Yeah, no, I never thought of Robin Hood much. But, yeah, that's pretty much what I thought of because that's just
that's what you hear.
How it was always said. Yeah.
Yeah. And yet, when you watch the films or you read the stories, he literally, yeah, he stops, rich people going through the woods. But what do they have with them? Taxes. What do they have? Money for an army. It's all government. He wasn't stealing from the, rich. He was stealing from the sheriff. He was stealing from the government. Okay. So it'd be kind of interesting to see who the equivalent of Robin Hood would be. I guess Grover Norquist probably thinks of himself as the current Robin Hood. The guy that, Citizens for Limited Taxation. It's the tax pledge, Take the tax pledge. Make sure you're not going to raise taxes. Of course, we all know that's nonsense. They're going to do that, if they possibly can. Anyway, but I just like to point out little inconsistencies in life, and this is one of them. So Robin Hood immigration will be to rob from illegal aliens and give to American taxpayers who have been robbed by illegal aliens. In other words, we're stealing from criminals. Just as in Robin Hood's day, the sheriff of Nottingham was a criminal. He was a criminal. And he was trying to put. Gene, I just thought of that. What was the sheriff of Nottingham trying to do? He was trying to put Prince John on the throne illegally instead of the rightful king. It wasn't Arthur. Who was it? Richard, King Richard III, Richard the Lionhearted. Isn't that fascinating?
That it is. And look at today. Yeah.
I just thought of that. So yeah, the sheriff of Nottingham illegally stealing taxes. Yeah, Robin Hood trying to get the taxes back, and Robin Hood trying to put the legitimate, ruler Donald Trump back on the throne of England. I just think that's hysterical. As I say, you follow these paths, and you never know where you're going to go, and that's what I think makes this is kind of cool. So anybody wants to call and join us, we've got a couple of hours before Dr. Pry gets here. And then we'll talk nuclear weapons, his favorite topic. Quite honestly, I don't know how he does it. This is a man who's devoted himself to the study of physics and science and arms control and nuclear weapons. And every week he comes on here just like, it's just fascinating. But the devotion that he has, he must be thinking of nuclear war 24 hours a day. I don't know. And it's an amazing person. I love having him on. Anyway, so we got a couple, you can comment, Gene, or not, up to you, but we got a couple, we got a little bit of a while. So if anybody wants to join in our conversation here as to what exactly is going on, but I'd be curious because this is, Gene, maybe you can help me out at our county here in other counties. We've got press releases we've sent out about this. I'm probably going to send out another one this is what we're doing. And everybody, it's like nobody likes illegal aliens, nobody except illegal aliens and the leftists that want them to vote. But basically, American citizens have no use for illegal aliens. And yet, we have a bill that specifically takes money from them, takes property from them, takes things that they have no right to because they're a criminal, enterprise, and distributes it, disperses it back to Americans. And yet, you would think that, in this age of let's do something, let's get out there, let's fight for our freedom, that, okay, well, here's a way to fight for your freedom. And yet, it's not gaining traction. You know, so right. I'm at a loss.
The thing is, they don't may not want to look bad.
Oh, who?
Anybody.
The county commissioners?
No, I mean, look at how the woke culture is now. But even look at politicians. Look at the non-Democrats, in name only Democrats. And they aren't going to speak. They don't speak up for the most part, or even if they do speak up, their mouth and their action don't match. And so the thing is, they aren't going to want to be associated with something like that because they don't want someone to come back on them and say, oh, you're what this or that or whatever. Not that they are, like, just because they say, oh, you're just discriminating against them.
Well,
look,
yes, we
facts.
Are.
But the thing is, it could be just they just don't want to be associated with it, put it that way. And how many of them really want solutions? Really, when
you think
about government, how many want solutions and how many just want to perpetuate what is going on and also the, I don't want to say need culture, but the culture, oh, we need the government. We can't do this on our own. Yes, we can. You know, it's like
we
need to take back our power. Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy, but.
Yeah. Now that makes a lot of sense. But I think about that too. And this is not what you'd call, I mean, Santa Rosa County, in fact, a few of us got together. We were meeting yesterday and we're talking about making Santa Rosa County the model for the nation in terms of freedom. Well, we're not going to be able to do that if we have a bunch of county commissioners sitting on their butts, you know, in a county that is amazingly pro-American, pro-patriot, pro-military. I mean, there are so many, this rally in Pensacola last Tuesday for Doctors for Medical Freedom. Being against the mandates, which is we did a whole show on this. The mandate isn't a mandate yet, okay? You know, the insurrectionist, you know, the coup d'etat leader, you know, Biden has not approved of any particular vaccine, you know, mandate. It's still in the formative drafting stages. So they haven't actually done anything. They want corporations to do it on their own under threat of a mandate so they can have their cake and eat it too. So in other words, they get the effect of a mandate without having the liability of a mandate. And so this is what they're trying to do here. But, you know, you would think, though, that in this county of all, you know, of many counties, really patriotic counties in the country, and you'll find them in, you know, in the Midwest and, you know, up the north, you know, the north central and some different places until you get to the left coast. There are states all across this country that have counties in those states that are extremely patriotic and I think would jump at the chance to do this. Of course, they don't know about it yet, you know, because they don't have that $1 million marketing budget. We're working on it. So I think a lot of it's just lack of knowledge, but here they do know about it, you know, and the media knows about it because we've told them, you know, the show is here. I've contacted several of the commissioners, as has David. So they know about this, but yet in a county as patriotic and military and independent and American as this county, and they still aren't doing much to get it out there. This is what I say. I mean, I know why, but I don't know why. You know, I mean, the reasons you say make perfect sense, but in their gut, you know, I hope that they're wrestling with this a little bit. I mean, granted, I don't have a whole bunch of money to throw in their campaign coffers. I just don't. And, I wouldn't do it anyway because that's not how I operate. I hope it's not that simple. That it's just because I don't have money, I don't have power, and I can't help the reelection. I hope it's not that. But I don't know because they're not talking to me. So there's my dilemma.
I don't know. I just think a lot of them are, they're not, I don't want to say true Republicans. I just want to say they're not true American loving citizens. They will do whatever they need to remain in their power.
That's what might make them true Republicans. Let me play something real quick and then I come back with our bill and let you know what I did. Because I rewrote it over the weekend.
Joe Biden's Dark Winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
I love that. And I made that before the election. That's the funny part about this is that, this was a joke. This can't possibly happen. You know, there's no way that the basement bomber, the father of Hunter, Hunter the first, world explorer is ever going to get in the White House unless, of course, they steal it. And, of course, that's exactly how it happened. So that's interesting, too. All right, let's get started in the bill here. Gene, jene jump into the conversation or ring the bell for room service or let's say Action Radio service. I want to get started in this. So I've taken a look at this. So I wrote a bill with David Jones, again, Santa Rosa Volunteers, which is a great organization getting volunteers together to do basically what we're doing. And we work on the bills at this point. We're the creative end of it. And then the folks that go to the meetings and knock on the doors and send out the emails and do all the necessary outreach work. That's David especially. It's not mine. Mine is actually, sitting down over, sitting in front of a computer going, what should this say? And then, of course, a lot of research goes into this and everything else. Anyway, so the bill is titled the Santa Rosa County, Florida Illegal Alien Free Zone Act of 2021. So I wrote it. We did a web change here. So it says September 13th, 2021. I actually wrote, month or so before that. So I'm just going to go through each section. We'll stop and take a quick break. It's not that long a bill. And that's the whole point of these things. Most of these are like one or two pages as opposed to the 3,000 pages of fine print that are going into the Green New Deal $5 trillion disaster that is currently before Congress. Anyway, so the intro says, illegal aliens present a dangerous, costly, and completely preventable criminal, financial, employment, and other burdens upon the lawful citizens and legal immigrants of Santa Rosa County, Florida. As illegal aliens are criminals simply by being in the country illegally, and therefore our county illegally, all that need be established to assess civil asset forfeiture penalties is to verify their non-citizen status. Anyone not a U.S. citizen, permanent resident, on temporary visa status, or a legal tourist is unlawfully in the country. Citizenship is public information, declared every time one registers to vote, enters or leaves the United States, and many other necessary declarations. Citizenship is routinely checked and declared at the county level. The massive influx of illegal aliens crossing our now non-existent southern border, most of whom are headed for Florida, and aided by our own federal government and various NGOs, that's non-governmental organizations, creates a real emergency for Florida. Therefore, to protect our state and our county, Santa Rosa County shall be declared and this is in quotes, illegal alien free zone. Signs to this effect shall be posted at main road entrances to the county. This ordinance shall be enforced countywide. It is our sincere hope that every county in Florida and counties across the United States will use this legislation as a model to make their jurisdiction free of illegal aliens. So when I write a bill, for those that want to write a bill for yourself, for your county, for your state, for your country, there's a really simple format, and I use it with all my bills too. So I have an introduction or rationale. In other words, why are we doing this bill? I then present a lot of times the old, the current law, the thing that we're changing, and then you put the proposed law, what you're trying to change it to. And you might be deleting a law, you might be adding new law, or you might be amending a law that already exists. In this case, we're adding something that does not exist. Although I believe that our local county sheriffs and Santa Rosa County Sheriffs and Milton City Police have this power already to seize any property belonging to illegal aliens, they just don't do it because they think it's federal. So the whole point of this bill is to bring a local law enforcement procedure so we don't need the feds, we're not talking about the feds, we're not rounding people up, we're not doing anything with people, we're just taking stuff, okay? I mean, the immigration part of it, that is up to the federal government, that's their job, and it's up to the state to kick people out of Florida, who aren't citizens of the United States and therefore not citizens of our state by virtue of the 14th Amendment. But we're not doing, I purposely tried to avoid conflict, real or imagined, with federal law, federal duties, federal responsibilities, and we're not really talking about the border here. What we're really doing is taking stuff from illegals in our county. So in other words, stay out of our county and you keep your illegal stuff. Hopefully some other county will take it. Anyway, that's the whole idea behind the bill. If you want to drag, see if Gene has a question, or otherwise I shall proceed. Seeing none, I shall proceed on. Again, Gene, feel
free
to...
Yeah, you can proceed. I have no questions.
All right. Okay, so I'll wait for you then to get through this. Like I say, it's a one-page deal here. So the next thing, of course, is verification of citizenship. Through voter registration, driver's license, and E-Verify, well-established citizenship criteria have been established for the state of Florida. The county should adopt those provisions that specifically prove citizenship beyond doubt, with two or more forms of ID possibly being necessary, and shall not limit qualification merely to legal work status. So in other words, a lot of times when I write citizen legislation, I don't define everything for the legislature. Okay, there's certain things that they need to look into, study, approve of, and come up with themselves. And this is one of those things. So it's really, so the bill leaves open to the county the means by which they will determine citizenship. They can make it stricter than Florida law. I hope they wouldn't make it looser. I don't think they can make it any looser, because that would be the standard here. And of course, E-Verify standard is another one too. You got to have naturalization papers or a birth certificate with a current ID. And I think our driver's license is moving to a citizenship driver's license. So in other words, because I had to show my citizenship before I got my driver's license. I had my old California license when I came here, and I had my passport. And so I had my passport to prove my citizenship, and I had my my driver's license, for ID purposes, for a government picture ID. So those two things are needed. So you got the picture ID and the photo and the passport, you got that. A birth certificate by itself does not have a picture ID for the simple reason that you're just born. It would be kind of stupid to have a birth certificate picture, and use that as an ID. But it is a county certified, not a hospital certified, but a county certified ID in the county that you were born, unless you're, of course, Barack Obama, in which case we have no idea, where the real document is. Yeah, throw that in just to see who's listening. All right. I'm surprised we don't have when I say something like that, the bump and jack doesn't immediately leap on the live chat and go, "Craig, you're da 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 da." Anyway, I'm checking the live chat. Oh, he's already there. I didn't even know that.
He did already put some stuff in there that says why you're wrong, because according to the Constitution, illegals do have rights.
Oh, that's interesting. How do you have rights, in a place you're not allowed to be in? Well, I put that question out there again. So this is my standard question. And God bless Bumpin' Jack, because without Bumpin' Jack, we wouldn't know what folks that disagree with the show. I mean, I do get it in comments and things like that. But, this is a great place for you to criticize the show, is in our live chat. Live chat's at the bottom of the broadcast page. You can type in anything you want. You can, be as obnoxious as you want. And if you're really obnoxious, we'll delete it. If you do personal attacks, you're gone. But as long as you're criticizing, strongly, vehemently disagreeing with things I say on the show, if you stick to issues, you're more than welcome to be as controversial as you want. I don't care. That's the whole point of free speech, something that the left doesn't quite understand yet, but, we're working on that. All right, so, Gene, if you have a chance to look up those citations that Bumper Jack had.
I am, and they both say that, they do have legal status under the Constitution.
And who said that? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
But the thing that gets me is it's like people that live here have legal status, but they should not. I mean, are they living here? Because all intents purposes, who knows they're here?
Well, it doesn't matter if they're living here or not. The whole point of being an illegal alien is to live here and take stuff, take jobs, education, welfare, money, transfer it back to the, your family and your nation back home, that kind of stuff. That's what illegal aliens are doing here.
So it
not
says
here to
every
assimilate. Yeah.
Every individual residing within the boundaries of the United States has a right to legal procedures in a civil, criminal, agency, and administrative matters.
That's so funny. I'm not laughing at you. So which court made this bogus ruling?
Let me go back. This is it's from Andres E. Martinez Malin. The Law Office of Yolanda Castro Dominguez, let me see where it
this
is
from
I
a law office.
Yeah,
it was immigration
just,
law.
It was just this person's viewpoint on everybody has rights in this country.
Oh, that's fascinating. Okay,
yeah,
that's wrong because the Constitution doesn't say that. That is amazing. Well, and this is one of the problems. The Supreme Court. Supreme Court is people. Supreme, the law of the land is the Constitution. So the words of the Constitution are supreme over the opinions of the people on the Supreme Court. So the Supreme Court can say, go ahead, Jane. Yeah.
I was going to say, on this other one from Little Rock, it says, Yes, without question. The Constitution applies to undocumented immigrants on the basis of personhood and jurisdiction in the United States. Many parts of the Constitution uses the term people or person rather than citizen. We can reasonably conclude, therefore, that the rights to own property, engage in lawful employment, rights under the Due Process Clause and Equal Protection Clause apply to citizens and non-citizens. So to me, these are just people writing paper saying why and using rights as Oxford Dictionary defines as moral or legal entitlements. It's like, okay. It's just crazy because, yeah, so as far as I can tell, it's just these people's viewpoints as to why undocumented immigrants.
You mean illegal aliens? There's no such thing as an undocumented immigrant. First of all, immigrants have to be documented or they wouldn't become immigrants. They wouldn't be lawfully in the country if they weren't documented as to which country they're coming from and having been vetted. So there's no such thing as an undocumented immigrant. Secondly, all these folks from Central and South America that are coming into this country, Josie told us she's from Nicaragua. You know, all Central and South American countries have birth certificates. Okay, so all these people are documented. So the idea they're not documented, they may have lost their documentation, they may have forgotten their documentation, they have purposely left their documentation so they can come in as undocumented. But these people are all documented.
Yeah,
they all have citizenship. They all have records of their birth. You know, so this is, to say somebody's undocumented is just simply a lie. It's just simply propaganda.
So the 20-some-year-olds can come in and say they're 17-year-old and go to school. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And we all know how that works. Yeah. What a joke.
Well, let's talk about what the left is talking about when they talk in terms of, people. They say, well, immigrants are people too. Well, so are mass murderers, serial killers, so were Nazis, communists, fascists, genocidal death camp people, people that ran the death camps. They were people too, okay? They were horrible, disgusting, people that should not have been around, but they were people too. So if you're going to say, well, they're people too, that's meaningless. It doesn't mean anything, okay? Now, am I saying that illegal aliens are the same as Holocaust camp directors? No. I'm saying that you're wrong for using the example that they're people too and trying to include by definition, a person is someone that has, human DNA and is born to people, and that's what makes people, okay? But the criteria from that, that's a useless definition because it doesn't mean anything. Now, when the Constitution says we the people, it's followed by of the United States, okay? We the people of the United States. Illegal aliens are not of the United States, okay? So it's right there in the Constitution. So to say that illegal aliens have rights here when they are not of the United States is irrational. Okay, you're just making stuff up. That doesn't hold any water. The other thing, too, is people, and I keep going back to this, the only way that the left can rationalize illegal aliens as having rights is to totally misconstrue geographical jurisdiction and citizenship jurisdiction. Okay, those are two different things. Citizenship jurisdiction is what we talk about with immigration. Immigration and naturalization laws are concerned with citizenship, okay? So when the jurisdiction of who you are is defined by your citizenship, the country of your citizenship has jurisdiction over you. That's what citizen jurisdiction is. The 14th Amendment is not concerned with geographical jurisdiction at all. It's concerned with citizen jurisdiction because it says so, right there. The 14th Amendment, let's get the exact quote here so I don't misinterpret the Constitution. 14th Amendment, all persons, born or naturalized in the United States, those would be, Americans, right? And subject to the jurisdiction thereof, that's, Americans, okay, or born or naturalized here, all right, are citizens of the United States and the state in which they reside, okay? Which means that all persons not born or not naturalized in the United States are not subject to the jurisdiction thereof and are not citizens of the United States or the state in which they reside, okay? So the opposite is just as true as the positive is just as true as the negative statement. So that's citizen jurisdiction because it talks about all persons born or naturalized in the United States. That is a citizenship jurisdiction. And subject to the jurisdiction of is a citizenship jurisdiction. So the geography doesn't matter. I mean, that's why Americans who are born, on American military bases or born on airplanes, they're not physically in the United States, but they're Americans. Why? Because of their parents. Okay? Because their parents are U.S. citizens, or at least one of them is, and therefore the United States has jurisdiction over them. Okay. Here's the thing. Here's another example I use. And this is, if people are wondering what I'm talking about, if you're not, looking at your broadcast page because you're doing a podcast, if you're listening on the podcast, you can't see this. This is why the live show is critical. So try to catch at least one live show and you'll know what you're talking about. But on the live shows, we have a section called live chat. live chats at the bottom third of our broadcast page, and that's where anybody is free to make a comment. We have one person who makes a lot of comments, and God bless him for doing so, because it gives us so much to talk about. It's really kind of fun. But that would be Bumpin' Jack 5. So take a look at the comments. We've got a couple of cases cited there. All right. So that's where you do that. And that's so what I'm doing is basically responding to that commentary, because this is where I find out what people don't know. This is where I find out where people disagree. This is where I find out all kinds of things to let you respond to it. So until Bumpin' Jack 5 understands the difference between citizenship jurisdiction and geographical jurisdiction, none of these arguments are going to make sense. Or they purposely want to misunderstand that, or purposely want to misconstrue it, or purposely want to blur that line to try and push a point of view that's intellectually impossible.
Right. Well, they want their narrative to be told, or to be to fly. And it's like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, here's the example I used to prove citizenship jurisdiction. If an illegal alien living in the United States with an illegal business makes a trip to Egypt, all right, and an American citizen, makes a trip to Egypt, this is the first country that popped into my head, right? So an American citizen flies to Egypt, and an illegal alien living in the United States flies to Egypt, okay? They both get in trouble with the law. They both screw up. They violate some principle, Sharia, doesn't matter what it is, and they both, are arrested, okay? Where are they going to go for help? Okay. The American citizen is going to go to the American embassy. All right. Is the illegal alien going to go to the American embassy? No, because they have no jurisdiction over them. Okay. And the illegal alien cannot go to the American embassy for help because they're not American. They don't have an American passport. They're illegal aliens. Okay. They're going to have to go to whatever country of their jurisdiction, of their citizenship. That's the country they're going to have to go to. So if they're living illegally in the United States, go to Egypt, get in trouble with the Egyptian authorities, their embassy, whatever nationality that might be, Haitian, Mexican, Argentinian, Korean, Poland. I mean, it doesn't matter where they're from. Okay. But wherever those folks are from that are illegally living in the United States, they can't go to the U.S. embassy because we don't have any jurisdiction over them. And that is proof that citizen jurisdiction not only exists, but in a practical sense, you're going to have to use it. Okay. Gene, have you ever heard a story about an illegal alien gets in trouble in X, foreign country, and American embassy comes to help them?
Never. The people in this country, unfortunately, aren't even getting help. Look at the Haitians now.
That's a different story. I just want to make it really clear to folks that if you're an illegal alien.
But Bumpin' Jack wrote a few other things, and it's once again going in circles. The aliens receive treatment very similar to the treatment of U.S. citizens received in the context of the judicial system. A look at the 5th and 14th Amendments of the United States apply to illegal or aliens residing in the United States.
No, they don't. I think I'll do this tomorrow. I'll drag out the debate that actually was the 14th Amendment. They make it very clear what citizenship jurisdiction is. Well, let's look at the 5th Amendment. Let's take a look at the 5th Amendment here just quickly. And then we're going to leave Bumpin' Jack to keep reciting platitudes and repeat themselves. Once they start repeating themselves, they get bored. All right. But until then, it's really good commentary. All right. So it says, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime. When they say no person, of course, the Constitution is we the people of the United States. This does not refer to illegal aliens. Unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the military. Da, da, da. I don't see anything here that concerns. I don't see the illegal alien clause of the 5th Amendment. It's not here. Yeah, life, liberty, property without due process of law. Okay, so constitutional rights apply to Americans and apply to permanent residents because that's whose jurisdiction the Constitution covers, okay? Illegal aliens only have – they don't have rights. They have procedures in this country. They don't have rights because you only have rights in a country where –
Where you're a citizen.
That has jurisdiction over you, okay? Well, no, because we have lawful immigrants, green card holders.
Right, okay, yeah.
That do have constitutional rights. They have criminal procedure, due process,
sense.
Things like that. But they can't vote and they can't serve on a jury, okay? So they have limited, they don't have full rights, but they have partial rights, all right? And here's the thing, though, that an immigrant can lose their permanent resident status if they commit a crime because now they're undesirable. So permanent resident status isn't permanent. Okay, it can be revoked at any time. In fact, naturalized Americans have a lower standard of citizenship than natural-born Americans. Okay? Most people don't know that. If a naturalized American, in other words, if an immigrant who takes American citizenship does things like serves in their old government or serves in a foreign government or a foreign military, that citizenship can be gone. So there are many provisions that allow the stripping of citizenship of naturalized Americans that don't apply to natural born. Natural born Americans can't lose their citizenship unless they revoke it or whatever procedures. But even the most vile, disgusting, you know, natural born Americans will retain their citizenship, you know, because the country has jurisdiction over them. But naturalized do not. You know, so it's kind of interesting how that works. Anyway, so that's how that was the verification of citizenship, which we took a long thing to put across. But it's a really important point, I believe, to keep, you know, reiterating the fact that illegal aliens don't have any rights here because they can't. You know, and for all the court citations and the court's warped opinions and the court's, you know, manifestations, and it doesn't matter what court, from the Supreme Court to the lowest inferior court, it does not matter because the Constitution, the words of the Constitution, are the supreme law of the land. And the Constitution, as I've said, refers to citizenship jurisdiction. Citizenship is your nationality, okay? That's who has jurisdiction over you, and I've already proven that, so I don't have to do that again. Okay, so that should answer that for all those folks out there. Next one, implementation. And this is still my original bill before the Santa Rosa County commissioners. Now, if you want to contact these Santa Rosa County commissioners, please do. I'd love to have a groundswell around this. And I already said that. No, implementation. Citizenship shall be checked at every interaction with Santa Rosa County government, including, but not limited to, voter registration, vehicle registration and driver's license renewal, and business license application and renewal, health inspections, safety inspections, or any other county inspections, the parents of all public school registrations, property tax and all other county payments, plus any interaction with Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Office, including traffic stops, mandatory check-ins, sexual offender registration, etc. Traffic and other law enforcement interactions can be recorded with a time limit after the interaction to produce valid proof of citizenship. So in other words, if you're pulled over by Santa Rosa County Police or the Milton City Police, you know, and you don't have your you know, there's no proof of citizenship that you can verify, and they suspect, yeah, you know what, we want to check your passport. You don't have your passport? Look, come on in the next 2 weeks, you know, we'll check it out and everything's fine. Then that's how that works. So basically, interactions with county government, you're just going to do a citizenship check, which should be done anyway. It's like an ID check. Because citizenship is public information, you know, it's no more burdensome than an ID check when you buy alcohol. You know, so you have your business license checked. Well, they just check your citizenship because we don't want illegal aliens owning businesses. So we want to normalize the process of citizenship checks so that it's thought of just like an age check. Because your age is public information too. Otherwise, it wouldn't be on your driver's license. Okay, you know. So that's public information because you have to have a certain age to do certain things. You have to be over 21 to do things. You know. In the same way, you have to be a citizen to do things. And I think one of the things you should have to do is own a business, own property, own assets. You know, in Santa Rosa County. And if you're not a citizen, you know, if you're here illegal, well, not a, if you're not a citizen, permanent resident, you know, here on a temporary visa, or even a tourist who, you know. People that come here temporarily, they own property. They visit for like 3 months, the snowbirds. They come here, they own property. They fly back to Canada. They come down here for the winter. You know, those are actually migrants, by the way, you know, but that's okay. That's cool. You want to own property here? I don't care. You know, but as long as you're legally allowed to be in the country, you know, and we check that. You know, every time someone leaves the country or enters the country, they have to declare their citizenship. Every time you register to vote, you know, and driver's license now, you declare your citizenship. So the fact that you have to do it for other things, you know, is not burdensome because you're already doing it. And citizenship is so critical to what we're talking about here because we have such a huge problem with illegal aliens. Anyway, so that's the implementation. Let me go on to hearing no questions, unless Jean, you have a question or a comment.
No. Okay. And Bumper Jack still wrote a couple things, but
Let me know when something original comes up. You know, I'll check those. We'll take a break here in a little bit and do our Santa Rosa volunteers and some other things. You know, we'll sort of take breaks as we go through. We got some time. I had a bunch of articles for today too. It's kind of funny. I don't know if I'm going to get to them. Let's get to enforcement. I want to finish this bill first, and then we'll take a break and play some stuff. So the enforcement. So how do you enforce this illegal alien free zone? Well, it's pretty simple. Upon establishing status as an illegal alien, multiple illegal aliens, families, or groups, all such adult persons shall be subject to immediate and full civil asset forfeiture. This shall include, but not be limited to, all property, houses, and commercial real estate, vehicles, businesses, where possible, bank accounts, credit accounts, and all such financial assets and accounts, and any other asset within and subject to county jurisdiction. So the bank stuff is still not clear to me because I didn't think bank accounts were accessible, but I've also read that in the state civil asset forfeiture, you know, of criminal enterprises, bank accounts are fair game. So that'd be something for the county to research and see if, you know, exactly to what extent they can do it. And they have a county lawyer, they have county commissioners. They can they say, I don't answer all the questions of my legislation, but it would certainly put it to them to give them the option. Next part, any citizen or person lawfully in the country, any group or organization, any non-governmental organization, that's an NGO, or any other entity within the county who in any way gives aid, comfort, money or assets, housing or residence, jobs or job assistance, education or training assistance, transportation, relocation services, any taxpayer benefit or welfare access, or any other form of aid, their property and assets should be subject to exactly the same civil asset forfeiture as the illegal aliens they are an accessory for aiding. This is regardless of federal aid and promotion of illegal aliens through the State Department or other government entities, because all such laws, funding, and programs are in fact themselves criminal for aiding and abetting illegal entry and settlement, and as such are unconstitutional and unenforceable in the states and counties of the United States. So there's two clauses here. One that says we can take all the stuff from illegal aliens, and two, we can take all the stuff from Americans who are accessories to the crime of illegal aliens. How's that sound?
Yeah.
It's pretty comprehensive. It's like the third version of this bill, so it keeps getting better. Okay, so the next part, disbursement of funds from asset seized. See, one of the biggest problems, so I'll do a quick history of asset forfeiture. Asset forfeiture really came about, I mean, it's been around since our founding. You know, back in the days when our initial government, our you know, post-American Revolution War for Independence government would actually seize ships that were, you know, pirates. You know, we take the ship, okay? So piracy on the high seas, the government would take the ship, all right? And so that's like probably the earliest form of asset forfeiture. And so that goes back to the 1700s. And so asset forfeiture has been a very common thing. And it's a lot easier to do, and it has much more desirable effect than incarceration in many cases, okay? So part of the reason I chose asset forfeiture as the penalty here is because I don't want to burden the residents of Santa Rosa County further by throwing illegal aliens in jail. You know, why would I burden people further for their crimes that further burdens people of the crime of illegal aliens? I don't want to do that. I want to take their stuff, okay? Because illegal aliens come here to get more stuff and money and send money back. So you take away the stuff and their money, you take away the incentive to be here. I want to make it impossible. I want to make it so, you know, so difficult for illegal aliens to be here that they simply choose to go somewhere else. Jane?
You know, I'm just here, come legally. That's all I got to say, come legally.
Yeah. It's easy. I did. You know, well, it takes time and it takes effort, but people don't want, they want the instant. They want the illegal. And you got Republicans that represent corporations that want cheap labor, which is wrong. You've got Democrats that want, you know, illegal votes, which is wrong. So this is why we're not getting a lot of party support, I think, on either party, but parties themselves are quite disgusting. But anyway,
but how
the
can
idea,
they even vote if they're not a citizen? I don't understand.
They can't.
It's a mute
it's
point.
It's illegal. Well, here's
how
it's done.
I know it's going on because, mm-hmm. I mean, we had dead people vote last election. Mm-hmm. And people voted two or three times last election.
Mm-hmm. All
everybody
you need...
that did that should be fined and not be allowed to vote because they didn't vote legally. You know, one vote, one person.
I don't know where I heard
citizen.
This.
That's it.
But I heard this recently that voter, you know, people that cheat on voting should be treated like sex offenders. They should be registered and they should not be able to vote. You know, if you are engaged in election fraud, you know, you lose your right to vote.
You know, as a kid, I remember when, you know, talking about voting and being in school and they were talking about voting and what a privilege. I mean, it really is it's a right, but it's a privilege. It's an honor to be able to vote for who you want to represent you wherever and where you live, whatever, and it's whatever office. And to think that it's such a mockery now that our vote does not matter. And what, you know, we have no say because our vote doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's just really very sad.
Well, it used to matter. But that's the problem right now is that, you know, once your elections are able to be stolen, then there's really, you know, the whole idea of voting takes on a, you know, much lesser significance because they're going to lose it anyway. So citizen legislation is one of the many, many cures to a lot of the problems that we're having. One of the biggest problems, of course, is illegal voting. So quick history of asset forfeiture. Asset forfeiture has a bad name because it was abused. It was abused during the drug days, especially in Florida in the 1980s. And so, again, asset forfeiture, the idea of seizing contraband or anything that aids a criminal activity. In other words, if you have a very fast boat for running drugs, you know, that boat aids your criminal activity. That boat can be seized. You know, crack houses. Well, you can take the house because the house is, you know, part of a criminal activity. And, of course, the leftist response to that is, well, property, you know, doesn't commit crimes. Well, I could turn that around and say guns don't commit crimes either, yet you don't have any problem seizing guns, you know, calling guns the problem, limiting guns, limiting legal gun owners for things that criminals do. Okay, so in the same way, you know, you can't have it both ways. You know, so the left really screws things up. But the simple fact is that, no, property itself does not commit a crime, but property is involved in a crime by people. And so if you want to deal with criminals, you can incarcerate them. You can throw them in jail. You can fine them, or you can you can take their stuff. One of the most effective ways to stop crime is to take their stuff. If you confiscate, you know, the Ferrari Testarossa and the mansion and all the things that drug dealers are getting from illegal drugs, you know, there's not much incentive to deal in illegal drugs besides the fact that you might end up in jail, but they seem to be avoiding jail. Asset forfeiture is much easier. I mean, that's why people do it. That's why law enforcement does it. It's easier. The problem. And the big problem with asset forfeiture was it was done before conviction for Americans. Okay, this is where the problem was. Okay, and this I vehemently disagree with. You can't seize property of Americans and lawful immigrants, permanent residents, until after conviction of a crime. Okay, because that's due process. Now illegal aliens, fortunately, have no due process because they can't be here. So the fact that they are here where they can't be, where they don't have any rights, means you can just take their stuff. And are they going to go to court to prove that, are they going to go to court to get it back? What illegal alien is going to go to court, you know, because they're going to prove their illegal alien status officially on the record? No, they're going to leave. They're not going to come here. So the whole point of having, you know, asset forfeiture is that the illegal aliens are not going to take this to court. Who's going to take it to court? Who's going to go to court to have illegal alien property restored to them? Oh, actually, you know what? I shouldn't say that, because probably some leftist groups are going to try and do that and try and use some bogus thing. Well, these people have rights. They have rights to their property. They earned it. Well, they can't earn it because they can't be here. And this is the difference between logic and made-up stuff. All right. So the question then is, where does the money go? So say Santa Rosa County, you know, seizes $1 million in the first year of illegal alien property. And the illegal aliens go, well, I'm going to stick around here for that. I'm getting out of here. You know, I'm leaving. So they leave. And so they leave $1 million worth of stuff. Well, that stuff would, you know, the seizing agency is going to be the county sheriff or the Milton City Police. And what are they going to do with all that stuff? Well, are they going to keep it? No. See, that was the problem. So the problem before was that the assets forfeited were kept by the law enforcement agency that seized them, and they sold it, and they bought things. You know, they kept the guns and for themselves, and they did all kinds of things they shouldn't have been doing. So law enforcement had a problem seizing the assets and keeping them for themselves, which actually they're allowed to do by statute. So that's how asset forfeiture generally works. Law enforcement used it as a tool to get the money to fight criminals from the criminals' own pockets. That was the original intent of civil asset forfeiture. The problem was they were seizing property of Americans who then were not convicted and then had to prove they were innocent to get the property back. See, the way due process works is you're innocent until proven guilty. So you have to be proven guilty with a conviction before your property can be taken if you're an American or lawful permanent resident, okay? Illegal aliens don't have that because they're not allowed to be here. So that's what makes the difference. But what I did with this was that, let me just read the thing. Disbursement of funds from assets seized. All funds resulting from the sale and disposal of all seized assets shall be apportioned in a yearly disbursement to all U.S. taxpaying citizens and lawful taxpaying permanent residents of Santa Rosa County, Florida. No seized asset or proceeds shall be retained or used by any government entity of Santa Rosa County. So this is the Robin Hood clause. This is the Robin Hood clause. All right. So everything that's seized, all the money from the proceeds, gets sent back to the taxpayers as a yearly disbursement. So in other words, it's the illegal alien reparation. So we'll be the first county in the country that actually takes assets from illegal aliens and disperses it back to the taxpayers who were robbed by those illegal aliens in the first place. That's the key part of it. So no government makes money off this. There's no incentive for government to seize property because they're not going to make money off it. I mean, there's incentive to do it because it's the law and it's the right thing to do, but there's no additional incentive to – there's no profit in this for government. There's no asset in it for government. There's no motivation to do all kinds of slimy things to get more assets of illegal aliens, because there's no benefit for doing that other than, you're making it impossible for illegal aliens to live here. And that's really a key clause of this whole bill, is that the government of Santa Rosa County does not make a profit on it. And I think that's critical to the bill. Huh. This is more involved than I thought it would be. But it's kind of fun talking about this, because then I can take this when it becomes a podcast and send it out and say, here, you want to know why we're doing the bill? This is why. And here's everything explained. Okay. If you have a question or a comment, please feel free. Otherwise, I'm going to move on to the education, because this is probably the most contentious part of the bill. Gene, move on. What do you think?
Move on.
Okay. Education. All assets as mentioned above shall be seized from any adult illegal aliens if their children or grandchildren are found to be in any Santa Rosa County school. Citizenship of all students registering parents, grandparents, or guardians responsible for the students shall be verified during school registration. Okay, so one of the key parts of this bill is we're not going after the kids. All right, and that's done for political reasons as much as the fact that I don't want to go after the kids. Because the kids are not responsible. Those minors that are brought here, by their illegal parents, they're not responsible for that. They're responsible for staying here after they're an adult. That's the point where they should be going back. So wait a minute, my parents committed a crime by bringing me here. I should go home, to the home country that they probably visited several times, know the culture of, and have a huge extended family. So that's what DACA should be doing. DACA should not be here. They should be going home and coming back. And I don't fault them for being brought here illegally by their parents. I do fault them for staying here illegally as adults. And that's the difference. So in this bill, we're going after adults. And we're going to seize the property of adults. We're not seizing anything from kids. We're not seizing kids. We're not discriminating. We're not picking on the kids, okay? Because the kids are not responsible for being in this country illegally. Their parents, grandparents, guardians, whoever else is responsible for them, those are the people that are responsible. That's whose property we want to take. Okay, it says the county shall, in enforcing this ordinance, challenge the incorrect assumptions regarding resulting from the illegal and intellectually impossible decision by the Supreme Court in Plyler v. Doe, in which a legitimate Texas law to withhold funds for the education of illegal aliens was overturned and a Supreme Court legislative remedy was unconstitutionally incorporated into the Supreme Court opinion of the majority. Probably going to take some explaining. Let me just read it again. The county shall, in enforcing this ordinance, challenge the incorrect assumptions resulting from the illegal and intellectually impossible decision by the Supreme Court in Plyler v. Doe, in which a legitimate Texas law to withhold funds for the education of illegal aliens was overturned and a Supreme Court legislative remedy was unconstitutionally incorporated into the Supreme Court opinion of the majority. So what's that all mean? That means the Supreme Court did something they have no authority to do. They prescribed a remedy. They prescribed a remedy that's actually a legislative remedy. They used their political agenda to make law for this country when they have no constitutional authority to make law. Having no authority, the law that they made is unenforceable. It doesn't exist. It's moot. So all these folks running around in Santa Rosa County and other places and all the school boards and the school superintendents to say, we can't ask the citizenship of our students and we can't challenge that. That's a bunch of BS. Of course they can. Okay. In fact, they're duty bound to it. In fact, this ordinance makes it a requirement that they check the citizenship of the parents, grandparents, guardians, extended family, anybody who's responsible for the kids, that's responsible for illegal aliens being in our schools, they're going to have their stuff seized. So what are they going to do? Well, they're going to take their kids out of our schools and put them in somebody else's schools, probably. But that's not our problem. I'm not concerned with that. And the other county is free to adopt this measure. But the idea that the Supreme Court can make a national education policy is insane. That violates the 10th Amendment, the state powers to do what the Constitution doesn't say. It actually violates the Constitution in the fact that education is not even mentioned in the Constitution. There is no education provision in the Constitution. And even if there were, the Supreme Court could not prescribe the remedy for it. The Supreme Court can rule on cases of the parties involved, and they can challenge the constitutionality of laws, and they can rule laws unconstitutional, but what they cannot do is prescribe a remedy. So the only thing that the Supreme Court could legally do in Plyler v. Doe is rule against Plyler, who was the school superintendent at the time, saying it's not constitutional to withhold funding for illegal aliens, okay? And then that's all they could legally do. Then they went further and prescribed this entire remedy. But even that would be unconstitutional because it is constitutional too. You know, the citizens of the United States don't have to fund illegal aliens. Okay, so the whole thing is bogus. It was a 5-4 majority case anyway. So four of the justices voted against it. So it was only one vote that caused it. So anyway, so let me finish this section. So because of this fact that this is an unconstitutional decision resulting in unconstitutional mandates, you know, from the Supreme Court, I say because of this, school officials in Santa Rosa County have admitted in public their mistaken belief that they can't ask the citizenship of children bound for public schools. With this ordinance, they never have to ask that question of the students, only their parents, grandparents, other family members, or guardians, which of course they can ask of anyone responsible for the students. It is the assets of those adults that is subject to seizure. Minor children are not part of this ordinance. I want to make that really clear, that minor children are not part of this ordinance, okay? Minor children are not, this is about the parents who are responsible. This is about whoever's responsible for the kids. That's who this ordinance is directed at, okay? And so if those parents are smart, they'll leave. They'll sell their house. They'll go. They'll do whatever, you know, and even that's illegal, but at least they'll go. So in other words, if we can reduce, make it impossible for illegal aliens to live here, you know, we gradually limit the place. Counties all over the country do this, and states start doing it. I'm hoping Florida will pick this up and make Florida an illegal alien-free zone. Okay? That's going to be interesting in the liberal parts of the state. But the liberal counties, if they don't want to, you know, they probably won't enforce this and they won't adopt it, then it doesn't matter because there's so many other counties. They're going to get all the illegal aliens. They're all going to be funneled into the liberal areas. So the left is going to be overburdened with illegal aliens because this is the opposite of a sanctuary county. All right? So sanctuary county is where the county violates the immigration laws, violates the citizenship laws, violates every law you can think of, and gives illegal aliens a safe haven. They become accessories. They become criminal accessories. They become, you know, they aid and abet the crime of illegal aliens in this country. All right? So this is the opposite of a sanctuary county. So they're going to, so the illegal aliens hopefully will go to the sanctuary counties, overburden them, and leave us alone so that our tax dollars actually go to Americans and lawful permanent residents. So this is all about. So I said this case was incorrectly decided by 5 members of the Supreme Court and can be ignored for the court's lack of constitutional authority to make laws or regulations. That Supreme Court case is therefore of no consequence to this ordinance before the Santa Rosa Board of County Commissioners. The reasons for this being an impossible opinion of the Supreme Court are, and this is key, the reasons for this being an impossible opinion of the Supreme Court are, one, illegal aliens cannot be in our country, therefore they have no rights in our country because you can't have rights in a place you are not allowed to be in. So this is part that never gets answered by the left. No one's ever been able to explain to me with logic and reason why you can have rights in a place you're not allowed to be in. because they can't explain because that's an irrational concept. That's why I put it that way. Two, the Supreme Court cannot compel any individual, family, or government entity to fund an illegal operation or population within the government schools. So the Supreme Court has actually wrote an opinion requiring the funding of an illegal, of a criminal operation. Well, they can't do that. The government can't mandate that you fund criminal operations or populations. That's insane. Three, illegal aliens have no immigration or any status in this country because they are not immigrants. One must apply and be invited into the U.S. legally to be considered an immigrant. I must also have an ID declaring their permanent resident status, known as a green card. I think I skipped over the initial part. Illegal aliens have no immigration or any status in this country because they are not immigrants. That's why the term illegal immigrant is used specifically to blur that distinction. Last part here. Four, any funds mandated for the education of illegal aliens in Santa Rosa County schools constitutes foreign aid, as it goes to foreign nationals who have no citizenship jurisdiction in the U.S. per the, quote, subject to the jurisdiction clause of the 14th Amendment. Foreign aid by law must come from an act of Congress and be paid by the federal government to foreign nations. You cannot require and compel American citizens to pay foreign aid to foreign nationals. That's part four. So I got four reasons why and I wish that was in the dissent. I wish the Supreme Court dissenters had actually used my opinion, but they wrote it long before. Well, they wrote it when I was in high school, so, you know. And the last part here, E-Verify. The county shall begin an E-Verify check of all employers doing business within the county of Santa Rosa, including first, all employees of Santa Rosa County. Then proceeding from largest to smallest, all government and private entities with employees shall have their E-Verify records inspected. Companies found in violation of state E-Verify law shall have their businesses seized. County officers, supervisors, and managers found to be in violation of state E-Verify law shall be subject to personal. The government doesn't get off on this. Okay. So the county's going to do an E-Verify check of, in fact, the county. So in other words, you know, everybody in the county has to pass E-Verify. Okay. So if illegal aliens are working for the county and some, you know, American or immigrant hired, they're subject to personal asset forfeiture because you can't seize a government department because it belongs to us anyway, allegedly. So that doesn't make any sense. But any employer hiring illegal aliens is subject to asset forfeiture. Any county government official, you know, who knowingly has illegal aliens is subject to a personal asset forfeiture. Because again, you can't seize government departments because again, allegedly they already are ours, and therefore it makes no sense to do that. And the last clause, very simply, jurisdiction. This bill shall be incorporated into the Santa Rosa County ordinances as law and shall under no circumstances be reduced to a resolution. Okay? That's a big trap, folks. A resolution is an opinion. It's not law. Okay? You can have the strongest resolution you want. It's meaningless. Okay? It's an expression of the opinion, the sense of the legislature that is before. So this is an ordinance. This is an ordinance that will be law when passed and where you go. But it affects the county just as much. So the county doesn't get out of this. So the county has illegal aliens working, and then the county's going to, the people that have done that, they're just as guilty as a business that hires illegals to work in their business. You know? So I've tried to make this as non-discriminatory as possible, as fair as possible to Americans and immigrants, and so that and not reward anybody with the proceeds, you know, of this law. So anyway, that's it. Gene, any questions? I'll bring you back in the conversation.
No.
Okay.
No. He wrote a lot of, or the person, I don't want to say they, whoever, made a lot of comments. But at this point, it's time to move on. And I'll read him. He said, only the feds can seize illegal property. You got zero chance of implementing this bill. Florida does not allow for forfeiture without court hearing before judge determining if the property was used in a crime. Oh, God. Then he wrote a lot of different things. Good grief, you have no clue about immigration laws. This stuff has already been decided by the courts. A county ordinance won't supersede a federal law. It already has been tried and struck down. I can't believe anyone would take your legal interpretations. It's hilarious. And then there's many other comments the person's made.
Oh, those are interesting. You know, I mean, like I said, it's good to see these things, but it's interesting that the courts have ruled against something that they've never seen. How did they do that? No one's ever seen this legislation. This is new legislation. So the idea that the courts have ruled against it is crazy. Now, Bumperjack is right in the sense that American citizens, you know, do have due process rights, and they do have a legal proceeding before property is seized. Now, I've already said that. I stated that earlier in the show, that Americans cannot have property, Americans and lawful permanent residents cannot have property seized until they've been through a complete due process process, which means, you know, arrest, conviction, and all that kind of stuff. They get a proper trial with proper evidence and proper discovery and proper challenge in court. I mean that's given. So I agree with that absolutely. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about illegal aliens who made the choice to come here illegally. Okay. So this is the thing people don't understand. No one forces illegal aliens here. They made that choice. And if you choose to be in this country illegally, you also make the choice that you have no rights here. Okay. Now, they don't know that. And the courts can't give you rights. This is the other thing, too, that Bumper Jack doesn't understand and the left doesn't understand. This is why I like going through this, because now I realize I get to talk about the arguments they don't have. Courts cannot grant rights. They can't. They also can't make up their own authority. You know, so the court cannot grant rights to illegal aliens because they don't have the authority to grant rights. They don't have the authority to make up rights. You know, and go back to Roe v. Wade is probably the best example. You know, that you cannot, the courts cannot just simply make up stuff and have it up. They couldn't make up gay marriage. They couldn't make up all of the things that they make up. You know, so that's, and a lot of these things are being, overturned by the states. You know, look at the heartbeat abortion law. So they say, well, no, you can't do that. The Roe v. Wade is an illegitimate decision. It has no authority. It's been moot since the day it was written because the courts can't make law. They can't issue mandates. All they can do, they can suspend and overturn laws that are unconstitutional. I mean, that's their job. Okay, and that's not interpreting the Constitution. That's using it. That's using it for its intended purpose. All right, and the states are incorporated into the Bill of Rights so that the Supreme Court can overturn state laws that violate the Constitution, particularly the Bill of Rights. That's their job too. What they cannot do is prescribe a legislative remedy beyond that, and they certainly can't require Americans to fund a criminal enterprise in this country. Okay, and that's very simple. So what Bumperjack is saying is I don't have I can't say what I'm saying. My opinions don't count. But my opinions have, you know, but what I'm stating here, these arguments have not been overturned by anybody. So Bumblejack is not presenting logical arguments, just presenting that the court says I can't do that, which is not true, because again, the courts cannot make they cannot issue rights, they cannot create rights, they can't do any of the things they do. So to go by a court decision that's illegal, it's not what I'd call an argument. Did I miss anything, Gene? I pretty much got that covered.
No. Okay. I mean, he made a couple more comments, and just that you
circular arguments.
You think you can interpret the law, and the Supreme Court is wrong. You can't make this stuff up. LOL.
Oh. Well, they're right.
You know, I don't even know why we're talking about this, because there's a lot of other stuff going on in the news, and it's like, you know, if he wants to have a discussion, okay, have a discussion, but it's like you're going around in circles once again.
Oh no, I'm done. I mean, I've rebutted, you know, those lack of arguments, and I definitely want to move on. I'm going to play my piece on Anti-Federalist number 6, and then I'm going to turn it over to you. So any of the stories that you want to talk about in the news for the next hour, I've got more stuff on asset forfeiture, but I think I've pretty much saturated that. So let's play some. Go ahead.
The thing is, it's just too bad Bumblejack doesn't call in and just discuss things with you, and that way you can have an open discussion versus, you know, and just cut it off when, once again, it goes around in circles. It's like, we all know the Supreme Court, you know, I'm so disgusted in them. They don't do their job. They just kind of pass the buck and do what they want versus doing what they're supposed to be doing. But then we got the criminal in chief in office and his just incompetent entire staff. I would like one person to call in or go to chat and tell me one person in the Biden, whatever it is, that's competent, knows what they're doing. No one.
Yeah. What I got an article on that too. Well, let's talk about that. Let's play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece, and then we'll leave this issue alone. There's a bunch of other things to talk about, but you're absolutely right. So let's play this back in a few minutes, and I hope you enjoyed this. And we'll go back to our founding, and as we draw the knowledge from our founding, you see how much of it applies today, especially the Anti-Federalist Papers. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Anti-Federalist number 6 was written officially under the name Sentinel, which is a collaboration of writers. This one is pure genius, so much so that I hardly need to comment except to present the most brilliant passages. I encourage you to read the whole of Anti-Federalist number 6, as it is quite short, and in that brevity lies its power. It was published January 16, 1788. It begins, "The evils of anarchy have been portrayed with all the imagery of language in the growing colors of eloquence. The affrighted mind is thence led to clasp the new Constitution as the instrument of deliverance, as the only avenue to safety and happiness. To avoid the possible and transitory evils of one extreme, it is seduced into the certain and permanent misery necessarily attendant on the other." This is a great summation of what the much longer-winded Alexander Hamilton and John Jay were trying to hide in obfuscating yet colorful language. But essentially, that's it. Adopt the Constitution as is, or it's all over. America will cease to exist as we know it. The author then posits, if it's all over, if we don't immediately embrace the Constitution, and we descend into decadence and anarchy, is that really the worst possible outcome? Continuing on, Sentinel says this, "If anarchy, therefore, were the inevitable consequence of rejecting the new Constitution, it would be infinitely better to incur it, for even then there would be at least the chance of good government rising out of the licentiousness. But to rush at once into despotism because there is a bare possibility of anarchy ensuing from the rejection, or from what is yet more visionary,
the small delay that would be occasioned by a revision and correction of the proposed system of government is so superlatively weak, so fatally blind, that it is astonishing any person of common understanding should suffer such an imposition to have the least influence on his judgment. In more modern language, stop filling the people with BS propaganda and tell the truth, because your lies aren't working. Then Sentinel presents the most brilliant observation into the fawning over and acceptance of the opinions of so-called, quote, experts, simply because they have risen to preeminent status. And that status alone is all that is needed to justify their aims, goals, and opinions. This mistake is the basis for the entire acceptance of government response to COVID, where clearly the experts are doing everything wrong, but want you to believe it's right, even after hundreds of thousands of people have died needlessly. But it's okay because they are experts, and they know best. Sentinel continues, but when I view among such converts men otherwise preeminent, it raises a blush for the weakness of humanity that these, her brightest ornaments, should be so dim-sighted to what is self-evident to most men, that such imbecility of judgment should appear where so much perfection was looked for. This ought to teach us to depend more on our own judgment and the nature of the case than upon the opinions of the greatest and best of men who, from constitutional infirmities or particular situations, may sometimes view an object through a delusive medium, but the opinions of great men are more frequently the dictates of ambition or private interest. Could anything more true be said today? This paper is so good, so full of richness, so prophetic as to what is happening today, that I'm going to hold at this the first paragraph and pick it up again next week with more of this amazing analysis, not only of what might happen with the ratification of the Constitution, but what actually did. The anti-federalists, it appears, were right. So now, what should we do? The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. All right. I was just going to play something else, but I think I want to get back to, I want to give Gene more time to talk about stories. So let's wake you up and we'll be right back.
Action Radio. Dangerously cool.
All right, Gene. So what's bugging you? What happened over the weekend? What stories do you want to get off your chest, as they say?
You know, there's numerous, but no, I just, Greg, you know, I'm kind of, I don't want to say frustrated, but I'm just so disillusioned, disheartened by what is going on in government. It's like when you talk about the illegals and not having rights and having rights and whatever, and then you look at this country and just people, American citizens, and how our rights are being trampled on. And then you get Biden that says, which is a joke, that he doesn't want the vaccine mandates to separate us or something. I forget what he said. Vaccine requirements should not be another issue that divides us. It's like he said that on the 14th. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? What does he want? He wants the people from the hospitals like in Florida and Texas and New York that have been fired after being there some 20 plus years because they didn't get the vaccine. Maybe they should go work for FEMA so they can be bussed back into that hospital and work as a FEMA employee and they don't need the vaccine. It's like, why? Why do some people have the one set of laws and other people do not?
Oh, they want to let you know
who's in
charge.
And we have no one to talk to because all our elected officials are yes men or they just blow smoke as far as I'm concerned. Who is actually doing something?
Well, very few. In fact, this is the biggest problem I have with the Republicans, which is why I call them the gelding old party, you know, as opposed to the stallions that they might have been at one point in time and actually were under Newt Gingrich. They were doing some pretty good stuff there. But that's the last time I saw anything decent coming out of the Republican Party. They had the majority in Congress when Trump took office. They had 2 years to, fix the wrongs of the previous Obama administration. They didn't do it because they elected Paul Ryan Speaker. Who was his whole job was to make sure that the Republicans never accomplished anything. And he did it very well. The Republicans never accomplished anything except to spend like Democrats. So this is why the whole point of Action Radio in terms of being cynical, I'm pretty cynical too. But the thing is, you can't rely on personalities. So the point of citizen legislation is it doesn't matter who's in power. If it's good legislation, it's good legislation. And if the people get behind it, both Republicans, Democrats, independents, libertarians, constitutionalists, it doesn't matter who it is. But the idea of writing laws that make people more free than they are, and that's easy to do because so many things are restricting freedom right now, that to me makes more sense. So and I know a lot of people, want to, they engage in personalities. It's like if we get the right people on the Supreme Court, then everything's going to be fine. Well, that'll work until the other party takes over, and then they put the people that you don't think are the right people on the court. And then the people they do think are the right people on the court, but it doesn't matter because what you really want to do is have the court follow the Constitution and not make up stuff. Okay, and yeah, the court's making up stuff, and people are trying to get more power to it. But here's something I don't understand. When it comes to, to bring back our favorite commentator, Bumpin' Jack, and other folks out there, why are they working so hard to make it easier for illegal aliens and so hard for Americans? Why are they advocating for the enemy? Why are they going out of their way to make up stuff that is A, insane, B, irrational, and C, hurts us? It hurts our country to have people standing up for illegal aliens. It hurts our country that people standing up for people who have no right to be here and to trying to come up with arguments that would allow them to be here. That's just un-American. And we can disagree on policies. We can disagree on government policies, on corporate policies. We can disagree on pretty much everything, and that's okay. But to have somebody openly advocate that an invading army of illegal aliens who do nothing for this country except, make our lives miserable – and you can say, oh, well, they're productive citizens. They're working at jobs. Yeah, that they took from Americans. Illegal aliens can't be here. And the fact that these people are advocating on behalf of them to me is repulsive. I don't understand it. I will not respect anybody that advocates on behalf of the illegal aliens, no matter how logical you think your arguments are, because basically you're aiding the enemy. As far as I'm concerned, you're aiding the invaders, you're aiding the enemy, you're aiding the takeover of a Marxist state of illegal voters, and you're doing everything you can to hurt this country. And if you're doing everything you can to hurt this country, you're not going to get any respect from me, which is distinguished from liberals that love this country, the Constitution, fought for it in terms of, the ACLU when they were good, when they used to fight for the First Amendment, when they fought for civil rights, when they fought for equality, as opposed to, supremacy rights. Of various different groups and things like that. But when the ACLU was good, when liberals were good and liberals predominated the Democrat Party, I had no problem with them. We just disagreed on policy. We disagreed that, they would say that the government should fund a program to take care of something. And I'd say, no, it should be a private charity. It should be, hopefully a corporate program, or it should be something individuals do. So that's the big difference between liberals and conservatives. The difference between leftists, liberals and conservatives, is that liberals and conservatives love the Constitution, love this country, but disagree on how it should be run and organized. Leftists hate this country, hate everything we stand for, hate freedom, want oppression, think they're going to benefit from it, even though they're going to be probably the first ones lined up against the wall and shot or thrown at the gulag. They just don't know it. But the idea that these people are openly hostile to everything that's great in this country and are willing to, type little messages to advocate on behalf of the people who are here to destroy this country and take everything from it, I have no use for. I'll argue with them only to a certain extent. But after a while, you realize that they're fighting for people that as far as I'm concerned, they can't be fighting for and still call themselves Americans. That's how I come down.
No, that's good. That's good. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And you can think about it. You don't have to have an instant response, but feel free to think about it for a bit there. But yeah, But that's you know, why are they doing that? Do you have any more stories? Did you want to? Because I have a couple things. You know, I just wrote some notes here before the show. Yeah, go ahead.
I just want another thing for people to really do their own due diligence, and especially people with children, because Biden said, I think he said it over the weekend, that they've already, meaning the government, has already purchased enough vaccine for every child ages 5 to 11 in the U.S. to have it, and that families will then be able to sleep easier at night knowing their kids are protected. And all I want to say is last week I was talking to this lady, and she was telling me that, I forget how old her grandson was. I don't know if he was 7 or 11. I don't remember. But anyway, he was not teenage years yet. And she said, I can't wait till he gets the vaccine. And so I questioned her a little bit as to why. And then I said, oh, because – and I just made a comment that, you know, I don't have kids, but my concern would be – when they want to have children, they still don't know what the effects of an unborn child possibly may be. And then she stood back a minute, and she was just like, she realized that it was like, wow, I really didn't think this through all the way. So please look at all the facts that you know of. And I know there's not much when it comes to anything with the vaccine in this country that they're truthful about, because they're not even – the organizations that were supposed to document the side effects or whatever from the vaccine are not even being held accountable to do that, which I think is sad. But then there's something else that for those people that travel, I saw something and they said 40% of TSA workers or the workforce in the TSA are unvaccinated. And so I don't know when that deadline is. Is that October? Is that November? I think it's a November deadline where if they're not vaccinated, boom, they're gone. So if you're planning on traveling, at least by air, good luck, because know that we may never have it the same again. And you talk about travel. I don't know what it's like in Florida, but here, holy cow, did gas prices go up in the last week. And that's
what are they looking like?
Well, they're $3.09 here. $3.09 right here, but it's, I mean, when I consider even what it was 6 months ago, it's insane how much gas prices go up. And I know gas prices fluctuate, but we have Biden to thank for that, you know, and his stupidity as far as what he, well, what he says, I don't even know, but how sad. I mean, we had the pipeline. Why? Did he not allow U.S. people or U.S., the U.S. to continue on that, but yet he'd help Russia or foreign countries with their pipeline? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. And then I read something else that the CDC said that there's 185 million Americans vaccinated. Of that number, 6,600 something died. And so that means one in 25,000 vaccinated people are dying. And the sad thing is I'm trying to find out how many unvaccinated people are dying. And I wasn't able to find that. But to me,
that's because the CDC doesn't record it. They stop recording numbers of people that are DNA normal. Yeah.
Right. But then when you consider – this is just what they have documented. You're right. They don't record it accurately. And
they don't record it at all.
How sad is that? Yeah. But they're just putting the narrative out there that only unvaccinated people are the ones that are dying. And that's not true. But then it's like, why get the vaccine if it's not working? That's my question. And when you have all these other side effects. And in fact, I talked to someone last night and he got the vaccine. And after, I think it was after the second one, he started getting a rash, hives. He didn't know, everything all over his body. He thought he maybe had like something outside, like a bug bit him all over the place. I mean, I'm talking all over the place. Then he thought, well, maybe fleas. And then he had a big welt in the back of his leg that he, they said he went to urgent care, and they said he'd have to go to the emergency room to have it dealt with. He went to the emergency room, and the wait was so long he couldn't wait. I mean, how sad is that? So he went home and did things his own way. But anyway, he talked to a nurse over the weekend or someone over the weekend, and she told him one of the side effects of the many of the vaccine is skin does not heal. So it's like, how sad this, we are just being told lie after lie after lie. And then did you hear, this is, I mean, I don't know where we're going to go in the schools in Michigan, that in, I think in East Lansing, they have canceled Halloween and Valentine's Day because of equality and inclusion. Now, what
That's not the reason.
Is Halloween and Valentine's Day? It Valentine's Day, you can be male thinking you're female, you can be female thinking you're male, you can be female liking to be female, you can be male liking to be male. I don't care. But the thing is, Valentine's Day, love is love. You can give a Valentine to anyone. You know, it's like, so how are we in excluding anybody? I don't get it. I don't get it. But these kids, it's like, why are we allowing kids to be pawns in our own sick game?
Well, the left is doing that. You know, I can go through a couple of these with you, and we can discuss some of the things. First of all, the holidays, you know, when they say that you shouldn't have a holiday because you shouldn't have Christmas because not everybody's Christian, not everybody celebrates it. So that doesn't mean anything. So you're going to deny the holiday to Christians because people who are non-Christians who would not celebrate it anyway are not celebrating it? That makes no sense. You know, the holiday is for Christians. It's a Christian holiday, Christmas. Most of this nation is Christian still. It's a lot of other religions, and that's fine too. You know, but we don't stop, you know, Rosh Hashanah because only Jews celebrate it. You know, and those who want to celebrate Ramadan, if you're Muslim, you want to say celebrate Ramadan, go ahead. I'm not going to cancel Ramadan or say that I'm offended with Ramadan because I'm not Muslim. People want to celebrate Ramadan, go ahead. So this is an attack on Christianity. This is an attack on, you know, on Americans and American values. It's an attack on tradition. So people need to understand that critical thinking skills are not skills that you need so that you can be, let me put it another way. They're not skills that are critical for your thinking, okay? Critical thinking skills are not, as you've been led to believe, critical skills that you need for thinking. Critical thinking skills are skills so that you can criticize everything, okay? That's the Marxian dialectic. That's the cognitive dissonance. That's where they tell you one thing, but they're really teaching something else. They're telling the parents, they're teaching kids the skills that are necessary, that are critical for them to be able to think. When in reality, they're teaching the kids how to be critical of everything, critical of anything Western. You know, when they talk about white supremacy, Dr. Peter Pryor was really good at explaining that when they say white supremacy, they don't mean white people and white skin color. What they really mean is white values. And what they're talking about is European values that aren't white, they're universal. So when the founders wrote our Constitution, they didn't write for white people. We'll say they did, but they didn't. You know, the values that they said, when they say we the people, they didn't say we the white people. You know, so the values that came out of Europe, that came out of England, you know, that the king is not the only sovereign. The king is not the only citizen. The British are not subjects. They're citizens equal to the king. You know, that was a revolutionary concept. That concept didn't succeed because they're still British subjects. But when it came here to the United States, when the founders, you know, came from England mostly, and they came from Germany and other places, but mostly they were British citizens. You know, they came here taking the values, the greatest values of freedom from around the world, from everything from John Locke to Adam Smith. Adam Smith, economic freedom, John Locke, political freedom. So this is the greatest of freedoms and brought to this country so that the most people could have the greatest freedom and the greatest individual rights. That's what the left is terming white supremacy. The supremacy of individual rights is what they're criticizing, not the supremacy of white people. It's just that they use white people as the example when they talk about white Europeans. Well, look at what white Europeans did. They brought, you know, supremacy. Supremacy of what? The supremacy of the idea that the individual is superior to the government, because they don't believe that. They believe the government is superior to the individual. They believe the government is God. You can't have God-given rights if you're a Marxist. That's white supremacy. That's the supremacy of thinking that God is supreme over government, which, of course, God is. God is supreme over everything. That's why God is God. You know, I shouldn't have to talk about this. You know, it should be self-evident. You know, as Thomas Jefferson said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men, meaning all people, he should have said people, but he didn't. He said men, you know, are created equal, all right? And we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. We have rights that we are born with because we are human beings, and part of that is, you know, is the right of individual rights, of that the rights of the individual are supreme over the powers of the government. That's a revolutionary idea. But when they talk about white supremacy, that's what these people really mean, the supremacy of the ideas. So if you think of it in terms of the ideas, when the leftists are talking about white supremacy, what they're really talking about is the supremacy of the idea that our rights come from God, that individuals are supreme over the government, that we have a right to life, liberty, and property. You can call it the pursuit of happiness, but it's really property, and that you can't lose any of those things without due process of law. That's the supremacy, and that's the supremacy that I believe in, the supremacy of the individual over the government, the supremacy of God-given rights over rights granted by government. That's the supremacy. And so you look at any of these things that are going on, they have to destroy that belief. And the way they destroy that belief is they take kids and they're going to take away Halloween, which actually is a pagan holiday. When you think about it, the Halloween is really the end of the harvest. You know, it's the Druids, you know, it goes back a long time where people dressed up and celebrated the end of the harvest, you know, the beginning of the winter. That's why Halloween's the end of October. You know, coincidentally, it's not that far from September 21st, the vernal equinox, the autumnal equinox. So it's really a pagan holiday that the Christians took over because it's really popular and it's kind of, you know, it's fun. But that's why they have to, Valentine's Day. Well, I mean, the government tells you who you can love, don't they? You know, the government defines relationships, don't they? You know, I mean, you have to be inclusive of everybody. So inclusion really means destruction because you can't include everybody. You can't include Christians in Ramadan, Jews in Christmas, or Muslims, in whatever. But everybody can be included in Thanksgiving. Yeah, well, except the illegal aliens because they're not allowed to be here. You know, so there is no holiday for everybody. It's just because holidays all have a certain thing. You know, is Veterans Day for non-veterans? Well, yeah, you can certainly honor our veterans, you know, but if you're not a veteran, it's different. You know, so should I say we shouldn't have Veterans Day because I'm not a veteran and I'm offended by the whole concept? No, that's stupid. So part of being an individual is allowing other individuals their rights. All right. And part of it is that holidays, recognizing that holidays are really important to certain people. And the fact that you might not be in the group that celebrates that has no effect on that group being able to celebrate that holiday. The fact that there are non-Christians in this country has no impact on the ability of Christians to celebrate Christmas or the ability of anybody to celebrate Christmas for that matter. There's a lot of Jews, you know, taking off Christmas Day. Is that hypocritical? Is that blasphemous? No, it's a holiday. So you're going to get Muslims. I bet you the Muslims taking off Christmas too. So we say you can't take off Christmas because you're Muslim? That doesn't make any sense. You know, what if I want to take off Ramadan? That'd be an interesting concept. That's too long. It's a month. Besides, I don't want to starve for a month. But the whole point of this is about the destruction of the rights of the individual and the belief that God, you know, that our rights are God-given and not government-given. That's you take a look at anything that the left does in terms of diversity, you know, diversity training or critical race theory or getting rid of the holidays, any of that. It's all about destroying the institutions and the things that we value so that we value nothing except what the government tells us to value. And that's when they come in to replace it. Because the British philosopher Chichester, I forgot his first name, but Chichester said the danger is not that people, if they don't believe in God, will believe in nothing, is that if people don't believe in God, they'll believe in anything. And Marxists, communists want to be that anything. And that's what it all comes down to. Make sense?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I kind of goofed this morning. Yeah. I forgot that Peter Pryor actually comes on at the top of the hour, not the bottom of this hour. So we still have more time than I thought we had because I'm so used to him coming on at 7:30 and not 8 o'clock, but he won't be here till late. So anyway, yeah. So feel free. Respond in detail. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anybody that wants to call in, go to the chat. Feel free.
Yeah. Do you have more news items that you want to talk about? Anything else?
Well, those were the big things because those are what really caught my attention. But the what really saddens me are the 16. What are they? The 16 people in Haiti that went to visit that orphanage and then were hijacked.
Haiti.
Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Hey, I made mistakes too. Feel free to tell me, Greg. I think you mean this. Okay, fine. Yeah, I appreciate it.
No, but it's true. And it's like. And I haven't heard any more what's going on with them, but that the State Department, you know, they care for all citizens. We know that's BS because who's still in Afghanistan? You know, they're not doing nothing.
Who's
as far
relocating
as I know, to get
Afghanis
those
here?
Yeah.
Who's relocating Afghanis here? The State Department.
Right. So when they say they care, they don't care. And if they did care, they'd have competent people in those jobs. But it was interesting because I was listening to something yesterday and they said before Biden, it was like people, whenever a lot of Americans would go out of the country, other countries respected Americans for the fact they were American and they didn't screw with them. And at least not that much. But now, because of what Biden did in Afghanistan, every American, when they leave this country, are fair game because they know Biden's not going to do anything. Biden and this corrupt regime. And so I just think that's very sad. And basically,
let's hold there for a second. That's an important point. I want to stop there for a second because it is really important. Under Trump, you knew that if you were captured by a nation, you knew that Trump would send the embassy to help you. You knew that Trump would do whatever it took to get you out. When he got warm beer out of Korea, when he got, I've forgotten the name of the soldier that mistakenly drove into Mexico with guns, when he got him out, when various people, a lot of individual hostages of other nations came out under Trump, but they never came out under Obama because Obama is a groupthink person. He doesn't care about the individual. He certainly doesn't care about American individuals. He certainly doesn't care about American individuals who aren't going to vote for him, you know, and so it's groupthink. So Biden's a groupthink. If you believe in the group, then you don't care about the individual. So if a few Americans get captured or killed or held prisoner or tried unjustly or things in other nations, it doesn't matter because as long as the socialism, as long as the Marxism is here, that's okay. So that's the difference between Trump, you know, an American, and these globalists. See, the globalists don't care. As long as they can reduce this country and make us subservient to the global order, then they've done their job. Looks like you got Bianca in the line here. Let's
And just so you know, Bump on Jack thinks that you asked me to do this because I agree with you and that I'm nuts because I agree with him, because I agree with you. And this is crazy talk. And you know what? He's thanking him for his opinion. I always say him. We don't know who. Could be an it. I don't know. Could be multiple people. I don't know.
Somebody I've already banned from the show.
Everybody is free to their own opinion. I don't care. But and as I told them, I said, you did not pick me because we have similar opinions. It's like that. No, it's like you don't
care good at what you do.
You don't care what opinion a person has because it's like that's what makes us a country great. We can have differing opinions. It's just the fact that, you know, some people don't want other people to have an opinion.
Well, no, it's fascinating, but that's a way to try and divide us. That you're here because you agree with me, how many times do we disagree? We disagree on stuff all the time, you know. But that's okay because I don't think we've had a really knockdown dragout kind of thing. But for the most part, I mean, obviously, I'm not going to have someone that works with me that knows all about Action Radio that I can't trust. You know, so that would be stupid. If I to think that a leftist is ever going to be producing my show, no, it's not going to happen because I don't want to give them access to the show. They're not going to do that. That'd be crazy. So no, Jean's here because she's the best person that I could find to do this. You know, and that's simple. Anyway, I got a caller here,
We both have a love for this country, which you could say, he could say, or she, whoever could say, well, I do too, but I really don't think the current administration do. They have a love for themselves, the money they get, the ego, their priorities. We don't do it because, ooh, we're thumping our own chest. No, but that's what they're doing. Yeah. And they're as incompetent as the day is long.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the nice thing about being, you know, the CEO around here is I get to pick who I want to be my producer. So it doesn't matter what Bubba Jack thinks. I mistook Lita for Pianchi's number, so they must be close enough, that I got confused. So anyway, Lita, welcome back to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, good morning, Greg.
Good morning.
Just getting on. I spend my mornings with my son. I got up a little late this morning because it's Monday. but I was working late last night on some personal things. But I'm really grateful to be here this morning, and I love to hear debates. That's what we do in our little Bible study class. We debate. We talk about things. We talk about solving problems for things. And that's why I love this show.
Well, thank you. Well, I mean, God doesn't tell you what to do in Scripture, and you march in lockstep to what the doctrine is. I mean, come on. You think for yourself in Bible class? Oh, my. I'm shocked. That's what I am, shocked.
Yes, and everybody has their own perspective, and we talk it out. We battle it out or whatever, but we are all still love our country. We love each other. And at the end of the day, we still are friends.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's true, too. I mean, you know, I was at a meeting recently where we had, you know, conservatives and Republicans, and we disagreed on all kinds of stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, we all shook hands. It's like, you know, we may disagree on the methodology to how to get where we want to go, but we all want to get to the same place, and that's freedom. Okay. We want our country back. We want a free country. We want a country, you know, people say, this is the greatest country on earth. I say, yeah, but how great can it be? And people never ask that question. How great can it be? So this show, I'm not here to report what was. There's plenty of there's all kinds of news sources out there that will tell you the news. I'm not here to do that. Okay, I'm here to help this country be as great as it can be, and to change the idea of what it can be, to show you what a truly free country looks like. Because I don't know. I've never lived in a truly free country. You know, where the sight of you know, a mom pushing a stroller with a 45 on her hip is a perfectly normal sight. People go, hey, good morning. That to me is a free country. You know, a free country is where there is no censorship of the internet, because the concept would be abhorrent to people. What do you mean you're restricting what people say? You know, the fact that churches don't have to wear masks or separate by 6 feet or have a government that say who can and can't go. I mean, the idea that churches are touched at all by government is repulsive to me. So a free country is what we're talking about. Okay. And so we need to expand the boundaries of what freedom is. And a lot of what these laws that I do, when I talk about, you know, asset forfeiture, seizure of illegal aliens' asset, makes us more free, because it removes the burden of illegal aliens in this country that are, first of all, you know, just the fact that they're here illegally is enough reason to get rid of them. But the things that they do, the crimes, the murders, the traffic accidents that they cause, the school positions that they take up, the funds, the welfare, you know, the votes that they cast, the you know, the banks that they rob, the space that they take in houses, crowding our, you know, our highways with more traffic than would otherwise be here. I mean, the list is endless of what illegal aliens do to this country above and beyond. The only reason needed to get them out of here is the fact that they can't be here. This is why I talk about this kind of stuff. So we will be more free without illegal aliens. Try to imagine a country free of illegal aliens. That's my goal. That's just for today. I mean, I've got a lot of other goals. But think about the freedom of not having to worry about illegal aliens. Wouldn't you be more free? I'll ask Gina and Lee the same question. Wouldn't you feel more free?
Yeah, definitely. And tell that to the people that have lost loved ones because of the crimes illegals have committed.
Mm-hmm. I've
especially
met them.
When
I
they
met
were them. Deported and then they came back in this country.
Mm-hmm. So it is a denial of freedom to allow illegal aliens, people that can't be here, to be here. It is a denial of freedom. I want people to think in those terms, okay? Because this bogus leftist argument that drives me absolutely crazy when they say, well, they just want a better life. Well, that's no excuse. Everybody wants a better life. That's not a reason. That's not a justification for breaking our laws. You know, I could say bank robbers want a better life too. That's why they rob banks. Okay. Does that mean they should rob banks? You know, should we let them get away with it? No. You know, it's the same thing. Well, are you sending illegal aliens for as bad as bank robbers? Well, yeah, they are. You know,
yeah.
they're robbing the treasury.
But it also comes from the leadership as well. There's no respect. There's no honor. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
It's all free for all.
Yeah.
Basically, is what our president is saying to all countries. Here we are.
Who's our president?
Free for all. Our wannabe president.
President nobody?
I'll take that back, Greg. Our wannabe
that's okay.
President.
But do you see how conditioning it is? Every time I hear the term President Biden, I want to throw up. I get a gut-wrenching pain. Because it's President Nobody. There is nobody legal in the White House right now. This is why I came up with the term President Nobody. You know, try to imagine the impact on the national debate if everybody said President Nobody. The left would go into apoplectic fits of rage, tearing out their hair, screaming and yelling. It'd be all over the news. The right is saying President Nobody. You can't say that. Well, then we could get to explain why we can't say that, because he has no justification to be there. He certainly didn't win the election. It was stolen. So if everybody started calling him President Nobody, we could change the debate. We could change so many things in this country by just saying President Nobody. That's how powerful this is, and people don't understand that yet. Lita, what do you think?
I believe that Brandon thing is what they were saying.
Oh,
that's not effective.
It is.
Well,
oh, my God.
Yeah.
Because the reason I say that, it's like this is like the younger kids. Or not the younger kids, younger people finally speaking up. Yeah, and Oh, yes, yes. I was listening to something last night, and they were like, and some people had not even heard of it. And I was like, oh, my gosh. It's like you don't listen to the news because it's all over. Well, I can't say all over, but it is happening all over the place. And not even in this country, but they said in other countries.
Really? Oh, this is great. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So Brandon, if I remember, it came from like that race where they were actually saying F.U. Biden, and the CNN Twinkie said, the bubblehead said that this is, no, it's, oh, go Brandon. Yeah, because they're interviewing someone named Brandon, I guess, who was a driver. That's how I understand it came about, right?
Yeah.
What started? Okay. So what does it actually mean then when they say, let's go Brandon? They're really, that's the polite version
the
of F.U. Biden?
Because they were, the crowd was saying F.U. Biden, and the announcer said, oh, thank you, Brandon. So
right, let's go
Brandon. Let's go Brandon. They misinterpreted, or maybe she heard the wrong thing. But yeah, that
or maybe
was
they said into her earpiece.
So it was just another way of the media changing reality. And regardless if they did it on purpose or not, but that's what's caught on now. And I think people are saying that now because it's better than
it's an inside joke.
Yeah, and it's better than FU because some people do become offended with that.
Well, that's understandable. That's why we don't use the word. And even though I'm not regulated by the FCC, I'm not going to swear on my own show. And I don't expect anybody else to. I tolerate anybody else to, unless you slip. I mean, it happens. But as a general rule, that's not civil discourse. Those words are offensive for a reason. That you have to
and
have some words that are offensive so you don't do other stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
And
I
just want to say, Bumpin' Jack a couple weeks ago said I swore. I said it on the program. So I just want to apologize to the viewers if that is what I did. Because I typically don't, well, I do. There's one swear
look,
word.
It's live radio. We all get carried away. I'm surprised
I do when
don't
I get
swear
angry.
More. It's kind of interesting.
I try not to, but I do when I get real angry.
Oh, yeah.
Just warning you.
What's your take on Let's Go Brandon, Lita?
Well, I really don't have a lot of knowledge about it. I just hear it and see it on Facebook. But I take it as a joke because basically he's a joke, a puppet. And so that's the way I take it because nobody can talk about, it seems like nobody can really talk about or anything's not getting done. So they just make fun of him in that manner, another way to make fun of him. To me, I really don't watch the news. I try to stay away from that negativity. I glance at things because like you said, it's conditioning. And when it first started, I remember, oh my gosh, I was working in Dallas at the time and my patients had the news on all the time, 24 hours. Oh my gosh. And it was just mentally, it was affecting me. I could tell. And so I had to take mental breaks. I had to lower their TV down and I would tell them, I need to lower your TV down so I can talk to you about your medications, or I would use those excuses because mentally it does affect you. And like I had said in the past, I had to get some of my patients on anti-anxiety medications and blood pressure medications because it was affecting their health, listening to it day and night. And I even had talks with my patients about this when this all first started with the COVID, because that's all they put on the news. Day in, day night, I mean, just all bad.
And people were trying to get every word out if they missed
not
something.
To listen.
Yeah.
That's why I get on your show, because I like to listen. I like to hear the debates. I like to hear truth. And, of course, I do check on the news here and there, but I try
well,
to
Well, I check on the news, too.
It.
You know, but the thing is, I'm very selective. I'm not here to be another reporting service because that's already being done. I'm trying to find stories that people are not talking about. Like I got an article here on a teacher talking about why kids can't write, and I've got another article on the decline of the banking system. I've got another article on the State Department's plan to resettle Afghanis and the fact that the State Department has no authority to do that, yet they're being used as the new welcome wagon, you know, kind of thing. So there's a lot of stories here that we could cover, but I'm more interested in what you have to say and the thoughts and the reactions to the news. Gene, you're in the health professions too. And so have you seen or heard of, or is there a word for, you know, like news obsessive syndrome or something like that? NOS.
Well, the thing is, it's almost like a post-traumatic stress. It's like when 9/11 happened and people kept watching that over and over and over again. You know, they were getting so depressed and same thing. Just like Lita said, turn off the TV. It's like, yes, it doesn't make sense to keep playing this stuff over and over and over. And I do want to tell people it is good to be selective. I mean, if you like certain shows, watch them. But I just know, like where I'm at, a lot of people watch The View. And you talk about a disgruntled group of people. I mean, just their vitriol and their vile, their hatred towards people that do not have their same opinion. I just think it's sad because someone that watches that show, I guess if you're in their mind, they're like mine, then it's okay. But even with that, you go out of there just hating everybody and your uncle for the most part, because they never say anything. Well, as I say, they never say anything positive. They do if it has to do with Biden and whatever he does, which I don't see how they can find much positive with what he does, except for when he doesn't speak, but that's just another whole thing in itself.
Yeah, if he just shut up and just hidden away, just drank lemonade on his porch, we'd be in better shape now. If he did absolutely nothing, we'd be in far better shape than the...
I know, because look at Kamala, we don't hear from her, how peaceful that is. And then someone was saying the other day that she actually had to pay those kids to be with her while she talked about the space. Now, I don't know if that's true. I don't care if that's true, because I just think it's like she's so incompetent in her job that she... And over her head, and that's what you get when you don't have the qualifications to do something. You just get put ahead and ahead and ahead just because of your what other things you do, put it that way. And it's like, that's insane to have someone second in command of this country, and has no clue. She has one of her major jobs is the border. And what has she done but made it worse? And then spewed nastiness when they put out the fake photos of the people down there, the Border Patrol people using their ropes to lash or get illegals to whatever they were supposed to do, go in line or get out of the way or whatever. Mm-hmm. And even the person taking the photo said that was not what happened. But look at all the people in the government that ran down there or demanded justice before they even found the truth or before they even looked at it to find out what really went on. They jump at the bandwagon, anything that's going to, follow their narrative versus do your due diligence first before you open your mouth when you're in a public, you're in such a public, place as that. That's my just opinion, but.
So I'm not sure exactly which incident you're citing here. Who was calling for justice that wasn't justice and they didn't have the truth? What was that about again?
No, I was just saying when the people in the government were touting that the Border Patrol people were using their ropes to to rein people in. We need to know, people and I know this happens a lot. I mean, Maxine Waters, I don't know how she could even still be in government for all the illegal crap
she makes money out
throughout
it.
The years. But it's just insane how her and Al Sharpton, they just run down there. But even Kamala started in on it, that we need to find out what's going on. This is not right. Well, it's not right to have illegals go across the border like you're allowing.
Yeah.
When they're not vaccinated, when we have to be vaccinated, but they're not vaccinated, that's so sad.
I want to jump in.
Yeah,
for a second, all right, go ahead, Lita. Then I got a question for both of you.
I always wonder what they do with all the drugs. That's a lot of drugs they get too. What do they
huge amount
do with that?
What, customs when they seize it or what?
Yeah.
Well, they destroy them. I mean, they're incinerated, they're burned. And if you happen to be downwind of a ton of marijuana, I mean, you probably get a contact high. But yeah, they're supposed to destroy it, and that's the idea. But it's easy to make more. So seizing it isn't the problem. You got to stop the cartels. You got to close the border and have everybody go through a border checkpoint. See, people forget that the wall is not just to stop people from coming in the country. The wall is designed to direct people to a lawful border checkpoint. So that's part of the propaganda. But I was just, I was going to ask you guys a couple questions. All right, let's get to Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. Okay. So if you're going to take over the country, if you're going to have a fraudulent election, if you're going to have a coup d'etat, and you want to run the country from behind the scenes, if you're Barack Obama, Susan Rice, Valerie Jarrett, the other folks that are, you know, that are basically Obama's third term, okay, who better than Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as your figureheads, as your spokespeople, because they're not going to give you any trouble. See, if they picked anybody with brain in the head, they might want to run the country their way. They wouldn't run it the way Obama wants it run. So to me, this is, these are the perfect people for the job, for them, for the coup, for the deep state. These are the perfect people. In fact, I kind of wish, you know, Biden would step down and put Kamala Harris in there just because she is so bad, so unpopular. People hate her so much. You know, there was a commentator that said, you know, Kamala Harris is the one person that makes Hillary Clinton look good. Yes, it's amazing. But, you know, can you, if you look at it from the perspective of what the deep state and what the globalists and what the Obama, you know, third term are trying to accomplish, who better than Joe Biden and Kamala Harris? Comments?
Exactly. Okay. I agree.
So you got to look for the reason. I mean, you got to look for the rationale behind the story. That's what we try to do here. Yeah. Lita?
Well, I mean, he can't even finish a sentence or a paragraph without stumbling on his words.
Is that real or is that an act? Do you think he really can't do his words or do you think he's acting? What do you think?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, even with the past when in the debates, was he not like that? I mean, because even Donald Trump questioned him if he was on drugs because he even talked a lot better or whatever. I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, has he ever said anything that would put the Obama third term in jeopardy in his ramblings?
Not that I could recall.
So if he was truly mentally debilitated, they'd have no control over him, would they? Because he could say anything. He could give away the store. He could lie. He's got, he had access to all kinds of information when he was allegedly more mentally competent. But he hasn't done that, has he? So how much intelligence does it take to be – it takes more intelligence to pretend to be debilitated, but yet not say anything critically wrong. He hasn't given away. He hasn't said, oh, yeah, Trump won. You know, he hasn't said anything that puts the Obama third term in jeopardy. So that's why I say, how debilitated is he? Is he? I don't think so. I think it's an act. I think he's a lot more confident than people give him credit for, because otherwise he'd be saying they wouldn't be able to control him. See, he's controlled that's because true. He wants the power. But if he were truly mentally incompetent, he wouldn't know he had the power. He'd just start saying things. He'd talk about, you know, his childhood and wandering through fields, and he'd have his favorite ice cream when he was 5 years old. He really would ramble incoherently. Now, for both of you, because you're both in the health professions, don't people who are really mentally debilitated, don't they ramble incoherently about irrational things? Yes or no?
Yes. And they also speak from the heart, even when they don't really mean to. I mean, things come out that are odd.
So
yes, I can see your point. But I did see a video where he did, like, ramble and say some things, like, I don't know, that were kind of like, really? Is he really saying this? So I have to question that. So I'll see if I can find some stuff or, you know, come upon things where he rambled and gave things clues out. But, yes, I could see your point on that. Yes, it would take a lot more because mostly people that are confused and demented, there's no control, correct?
Mm-hmm. That was my thinking. You know, and when you look at the things that he signed, are you saying he doesn't know what he signed? He seems to know exactly what he signed in terms of executive orders. Otherwise, he might not have signed them. You know, if you have to be intelligent enough to know what you're signing. Otherwise, you know, even a debilitated person would, what is this, you know? They wouldn't sign the name. They'd be drawing pictures all over it. They'd be doodling. They'd be doing who knows what they'd be doing.
Right.
So you have to be intelligent enough to be controlled. I'm sorry. Was that Jean or Lita? Said what?
That was me. I mean, personally, I've had dealt with people that were kind of like in and out, like that, where they were alert oriented, but then there were times where they would kind of not be. They had
so can that be regulated with drugs? Because I've heard that he's on some kind of prescription, something or other, that will increase his alertness. So let's do you want to do a little research and see if you can find some drugs that would allow him to appear rational for a limited amount of time, for example, 2 hours of a presidential debate? I'd be curious.
Yeah, that would be, because that's, I remember President Trump saying something, questioning to have him do a drug test.
Yeah.
Remember that? So.
Well, let's find out. So if you want to look into that, I'm going to put you down here, my book of you know, things here. I'm on my sixth notebook since I started the show, you know, a few years ago. I keep going through these. So drugs that allow you to appear, drugs to appear rational. Gene, what do you think? Do you know anything about this?
No, I mean, there are some that make you more alert, but I don't know if they would do, like you're saying, about that.
Okay.
I don't know. And this makes no sense. Bumper Jack says I'm jealous of Kamala Harris, basically. And I said, because I can't hold a candle to her. And then he's like, you're a conspiracy hack, so I'm not surprised you said that. You can't even come close to her accomplishments, so you sound foolish. You know, the thing is with that, it's sad that the people in California don't even like her, number one. And number two, what she did to the blacks in California when she was attorney general is a travesty. Mm-hmm. So Bumper Jack can say everything he wants to say. Those are facts. You can look at what she did when she was attorney general. You can see that she destroyed marriages because of what she did. So don't come talking to me that I'm a conspiracy hack.
Well, and that's just a way to dismiss you. And I got Dr. Pryor on the line now, too. I'll get to him in a second here when we get to his theme. But this is a way. It's like when anybody says you're a conspiracy theorist. That's just a way to disrupt and dismiss. Or when someone says it's just your opinion. Or when that people, you know, you give a reasoned, logical argument with evidence and the whole thing, and they say it's just your opinion. Well, it's not just my opinion. I just gave you a reasoned, logical argument with evidence. That's what I gave you. And so there's no point because people aren't going to believe you anyway. It's like when people on the left say, you know, there's no proof to Trump won the election. Well, you could give them all the proof you want. They're not going to look at it. So, and this is why I said, I'm not going to give you the proof. The proof is there. I'm not going to waste my time trying to dig it up for you because you're not going to believe it anyway. You've already got your assumptions, which are stronger than the truth. So you're not going to rattle their assumptions that Biden actually won honestly by presenting evidence that is clear that Trump won. So it doesn't matter.
Right.
So they can say one of they can say conspiracy theory all they want. I can say, all right, let's call them what's a good word for you know, coup supporters or you know, you're a dictator, you know, something. I'll think of a nice little term that encapsulates, you know, leftists, you know, global supremacists, you know, over individual rights. But there's a word for it. We'll think of something. Anyway, you're both welcome to stick, well, Gene, of course. But Lita, you're welcome to stick around. We're going to go into our National Security Report with Dr. Peter Pry and be right back.
What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries? How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pry has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How much national security is enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry.
As we make the transfer from local civil asset forfeiture to remove illegal aliens from our county to what's going on in the world. Dr. Pry, welcome, sir. Where should we go this morning?
Well, thank you for having me. Well, let's start off with there are two topics I want to talk about,
mm-hmm.
the strategic stability dialogue, but we'll get to that later. More people may be interested in the latest demonstration of a huge technological leap forward by China in the in the strategic area, apparently it's come out now that at the end of August, the Chinese tested a new weapon system that combines, and we've been talking on your show in the past about how the United States lags behind Russia and China in developing advanced technology nuclear weapons, you know, that we're relying on Cold War era concepts and designs, and they're moving forward combining new kinds of technologies. And apparently at the end of August, the intelligence community was surprised again when China demonstrated what's called the combination of a fractional orbital bombardment system with a hypersonic glide vehicle. And they put those two things together. You know, we don't have either of those things at a strategic level. The fractional orbital bombardments.
Why do we have an intelligence community if they're always being surprised? So we didn't know they had that. You know, it's almost like an oxymoron to say intelligence community, because there is no intelligence in the intelligence community. Why were they surprised? Don't we have satellites? Aren't they watching? Don't they have, you know, even assets on the ground? Don't they have pictures? Don't we have a national reconnaissance office? Don't we have all these people? Are they so busy spying on us they forget the rest of the world? Why were they surprised? I mean, you're probably going to get to that, but well, I'm just, this is the overwhelming thing that just slaps me in the face every time I hear something like this. The intelligence community was surprised by the advancements in China in hypersonic weapons. Why the hell were they surprised?
Well, there's a short answer to that and a longer answer to that. We
okay.
could spend the whole show
Three.
Talking
I don't mind.
About
yeah,
it. But the short answer is that, mm-hmm. you know, the average American has an exaggerated view of what the capabilities of the intelligence community are. Mm-hmm. The idea that we know everything because our satellites are everywhere. They can see everything. Well, no, they can't. Even if you do have the ability to take a look at a license plate, for example, and read a license plate from outer space, you're basically looking through a straw, you know, and China okay. and Russia are big places, all right? And not only that, but they know where our spy satellites are. They know when they're overhead, and they can hide stuff from them, and they can move stuff. They know what our satellites, you know, that we have satellites that listen for conversations and that the NSA, you know, collects intelligence. They do the same thing, all right?
Okay.
And so because they have similar and maybe better technologies, you know, they know how to block and thwart those technologies. And they're also extremely some of the best intelligence doesn't come from outer space and from our satellites and from our high tech. Mm-hmm. You know, we've gotten very high tech with our spy networks, and for many years have neglected, the part of the CIA
spies.
Called the director of operations. Yeah,
we have spies.
This foot boots on the ground, right?
Yeah.
The guy who can break into a safe and come back with materials from a laboratory safe or something like that. Very mm-hmm. hard to penetrate or to bribe agents. I mean, it was just in the press last week, about how the CIA lost dozens of agents who've probably been executed and arrested in China. All right. People who we had bribed or through because they were opposed to the regime or working for us. But somehow, you know, obviously what happened is that China, they don't want to admit it. But what happened is that the Chinese have a better spy inside of our CIA somewhere who probably got those names. And, you know, the Russians and Chinese are usually beating us at that kind of a game. So that's how they do it. And then there's another fact. So that's the short answer that,
okay.
you know, for all it's cracked up, you know, the ability to do technological spying and all the rest, you know, isn't that great. You know, there are significant limits on it. And, but beyond that, I think one of the real reason or the more important reason that we get surprised is because our intelligence community doesn't tolerate diversity of views, all right? They're very
okay.
keen, as you can tell from television advertisements and stuff, on bringing in diversity of sexual orientations and diversity of races, and but that's the wrong kind of diversity. The kind of diversity that matters is intellectual diversity. You know, you want a combination of liberals and conservatives and people who have different worldviews, who have different takes on things, you know, so that they can argue about what the evidence means. And maybe you don't want to come up with a corporate view, which is what the intelligence community does. You know, in the national intelligence estimates, they want to speak with one voice. It's called a corporate view. So the CIA has a particular perspective. And this has gotten worse when they established the Directorate of National Intelligence that oversees the whole intelligence community, because the DNI wants to speak with one voice too. And so it wants the CIA and the DIA and the NSA to conform to what the DNI thinks about what the intelligence means. And so that's another way of that's the more serious problem, you know, that you don't have a diversity of views. And when you have a single worldview, as it were, you know, dominating the intelligence community, and if that's wrong, well, you're going to be consistently wrong. And one of the examples of this, and I think one of the reasons we got the Chinese threat wrong, is there's a persistent view that the United States is the dominant superpower technologically in all things, and nobody can be ahead of us in any of these technologies, which is increasingly, obviously, untrue. But nonetheless, that's the kind of dominant assumption. I mean,
okay,
a woke person might almost call it a racist assumption, all right? And I do think it comes close to that. You know,
okay,
we've talked on your show about how wrong we've gotten North Korea, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how could North Korea come up with the hydrogen bomb? How could North Korea so quickly develop ICBMs that can threaten the United States? Now maybe they've got a mobile ICBM. We don't even have that. Well, we don't want to accept the paradigm, and the intelligence community still doesn't want to accept the paradigm that North Korea is a client state of Russia and China, and Russia and China are allied against us with North Korea, and they're helping North Korea. They want to think that everything North Korea is doing is chiefly indigenous. You know, it's chiefly coming out of North Korea, which is what North Korea says, because North Korea wants to try to impress the world with what it's doing, but it's not true. You know, we can see, and they're just ignoring the clear evidence, you know, that the missile systems are based on Russian technology, the transport erectile launchers actually are manufactured in China. We fished boosters out of the ocean, all kinds of evidence. But anyway, I see you're trying to move me on to another topic.
No, actually, I'm just listening.
Answers.
No, I've got several questions.
Those are the two answers to why we're constantly surprised. First, we rely too much on high-tech spying, and we're not that good anymore at boots-on-the-ground 007-type spying. And second, and the more important problem, is there's this corporate view, you know, where the rogue analyst or the dissenting analyst tends to be shut up and suppressed, and they don't want to hear from that person if his point of view contradicts the corporate view. And the reason for those corporate views is usually, I mean, there's a lot of reasons there, but a lot of it is, they don't want to admit they're wrong. You know,
yeah,
it looks bad. It might hurt their career. And there are bureaucratic interests. For example, the idea, you know, if you were to acknowledge that that Russia and China are part of the problem with the North Korean threat, well, what happens to the State Department's strategy of using the China card against North Korea? You know, we've been doing that for 20 years. I've argued for 20 years that that's never going to work, because the Chinese want North Korea to have nuclear weapons, right? You know,
yeah.
And the State Department does not want to accept that. They want to believe that it's against China's interests, that nobody could want North Korea to have nuclear weapons. That's just not rational, that, you know, because they're at risk too from North Korea. Well, they're not at risk from North Korea. North Korea's never threatened them and never will, you know, they're a tool, but they don't see that. They don't want to see that, you know, they want to keep going to Beijing, pay for champagne and caviar in Beijing to clean glasses with the Chinese, you know, hoping that if we go to with our hat in our hand to the China long enough and often enough and make enough concessions to the Chinese that they'll help us with North Korea. You know, it hasn't worked. So,
well, this is, like I said, I'm not trying to move you off this topic. I think it's fascinating. I think it's probably one of the most important things we can talk about because it goes to what I've said about so many things about this show, that assumptions are stronger than truth. That, you know, we have a commentator who routinely says that I don't know what I'm talking about, that the Supreme Court can make up rights, make up laws, that they get to interpret the Constitution, even though the Constitution has no interpretation clause. But those are the assumptions that people grow up with. They grow up with the assumption that, for example, the Supreme Court can interpret the Constitution. It can't. It has to use the Constitution as written. It is supreme to the Supreme Court. Therefore, they cannot interpret and rise above it. But the assumption is that they can, and that's why it governs it. I think the same thing happens in the intelligence community, that they refuse to even look for something that they haven't decided is already there. And if they have decided that it's not there, there's no point in looking for it. So there's no point in looking for hypersonic weapons because they've already decided that they aren't there. So my question for you is, and you can talk about assumptions and truth. All right, go ahead. Let's do that first, then I'll give you my question.
No, sure. They don't want to see that. And that's how we were you know, we were surprised by Russia and China now being ahead of us with hypersonic weapons.
Yeah.
There's a faction in the State Department, for example, that doesn't want us to weaponize space. Okay. And so
a bit late for that.
That'll be very destabilizing. Well, I agree with you, but you'd be amazed at the pretzel-like logic the Department of State engages in to argue that, well, they haven't really weaponized space yet. You know, we're on the threshold of that, and they don't. And we'd lose more than anybody if space becomes weaponized, and therefore we need to negotiate. You know, we need to hold off on any programs on the U.S. side that weaponize space, because there's still some chance that we can talk the Russians and Chinese into not weaponizing space, and that's how you fall behind and get prized, and the other side gets a technological great leap ahead of you by developing space weapons. Same thing happened with hypersonic weapons, you know? All these things are going to be very destabilizing, that it can facilitate the ability to make a surprise attack. The United States shouldn't be working on hypersonic weapons. The State Department will tell the Pentagon. And Pentagon and the State Department will complain to the President and to Congress. And so we underfund, or in fact, we not only underfund but abandoned hypersonic research. I have a little story I have to tell you about this.
Oh, no, feel free. No, then, I got two people on the line. I got Gene and I got Leader who are both listening. I'm going to ask for questions at some point. And you tell the stories you want. This is great. I'm really enjoying today. Yeah, this is fascinating.
Okay. Let's talk about this Chinese system because I haven't really explained what it is, all right? Well, a fractional orbital bombardment system is we don't have anything like it, all right? Mm-hmm. It's a secret weapon that was developed by the Soviets during the Cold War, the kind of technology. We've talked about it before on the show. North Korea actually has these two. And what it is that you can, with the classic fractional orbital bombardment system called a FOBS, you know, it's a way of making a nuclear surprise attack by launching a satellite into orbit. So you can launch the satellite away from the United States. You'd launch it southward. So it looks like, so it's going toward the South Pole. And that looks, well, that's not threatening. It's not coming at the United States, and it's just a satellite, right? But you've got a nuclear weapon inside of the satellite. And the satellite goes over the South Pole, comes up the other side, and approaches us from the south. We don't have any ballistic missile early warning radars facing south. And so we're blind or interceptors. So we're blind and defenseless from the south. Then when the satellite
soft
gets over the
underbelly,
United States,
as Churchill said of Europe.
Yes. It goes off at high altitude, causes an EMP, and it fries our command and control and a lot of our retaliatory forces so that we're paralyzed. And then you make the big attack to blow up the bombers on their bases and the ICBMs on their silos. That's the classic idea for the fractional orbital bombardment system.
Okay.
But there's a new, and I think China is the first to have done this, even before the Russians. What they've done is they've taken a the fractional orbital bombardment system idea and combined it with a hypersonic warhead, you know, so that the hypersonic vehicle gets delivered someplace, anywhere in the globe, because a fractional orbital bombardment system can go anywhere in the world.
Okay.
And then it deploys this hypersonic vehicle that can then maneuver through the atmosphere and attack anything. And now I want to tell my little story that's related to this, okay?
Okay.
And this goes back to when I was in graduate school, when I was in USC, and I was still a young man. And we were visited, my mentor in those days, a guy named Bill Van Cleve. He was almost our Secretary of Defense. You know, he was very tight with the Reagan administration. He was on the Reagan Defense Transition Team, so he was very well connected with the Department of Defense and defense scientists. And he would bring in some of these people, very high-ranking people, you know, to basically give us a briefing as graduate students studying international relations and strategic studies. And this was in the early 1980s, and a defense scientist guy named John Dara, who came in to give us a briefing, and he talked about cutting edge weapons of the future that were visionary, all right, and that could make a really profound difference in the strategic balance and keep the United States far ahead of our potential adversaries. And one of the things he was describing was using an ICBM to deliver an air-to-air missile, all right, so that if suppose our Air Force got in trouble or an aircraft carrier got in trouble in an air fight, you know, out in the Pacific someplace, you know, we could in 30 minutes or less, you know, deliver a bunch of air-to-air missiles, automated air-to-air missiles, into that theater by ICBM that would then go out and shoot down the bad guy's airplanes, and sort of like the cavalry coming to the rescue, or deliver other packages of weapons around the world, you know, that would enable you to basically win the day, you know, by using those ICBMs not to deliver nuclear weapons, but to deliver sophisticated conventional weapons. And, you know, that was just a fascinating concept. And the Department of Defense was working on it at the time, early 1980s, mind you, okay? But the State Department didn't like it. And so that program was stopped. And now, in effect, what the Chinese have done is a lot what John Darrow. I mean, it's basically demonstrating in principle the kind of weapon system that John Darrow described to us back in the early 1980s. And that's how we get surprised. And that's how the bad guys get ahead of us. You know, because we've got problems within our system with the bureaucracies fighting with each other. And usually it's the arms control community that ends up winning. And that's bad for our national security in the long run. Because the arms control people, as we've discussed before on your program, I think are basically a ship of fools, you know. And they assume that China and Russia are reasonable people who also want arms control, and that we can talk them into not developing systems such as the one that John Darrow described, all right? And that if we exercise restraint and don't do that, they'll never do it either. Well, that never seems to work out. They always do it. And so we're getting further and further behind. We used to have a huge technological lead over these countries. And now they're the ones that have got a technological lead over us. And this is part of the reason is the politics of arms control and defense, you know, the tension between these things. And the arms control people always tend to win. And this is where I would transition to my topic number two about Biden's strategic stability dialogue that's going on with Russia. But I'll pause there so that you can have questions, or maybe if your other people had wanted to make comments, we can do that.
This is great. This is a wonderful chat this morning. Gene, Lita, do you have a question for Dr. Pry? Anybody want to, or are you just kind of blown away by all this stuff?
I'm blown away by it. I'm just intrigued listening.
Okay, that's Lita. Jean, did you have a comment? All right, I got a couple things. And we have actually have a little hotel bell if Jean wants to ever do it. We've got a sort of a little chime to kind of, to get my attention. Jean, did you have something? That's just, I know she's there. The line went live. Okay. My questions, I'm going to ask you this in a bit, is how the State Department got all this power. But my contention is if we can do it, other people can do it. And so when did you first hear about the whole concept of hypersonic weapons, Dr. Pry? When did those first come to your attention?
Well, the possibility of hypersonic weapons was in the early 1980s. You know, I heard it from John Darrow, who was a very senior defense scientist. This was one of the panoply of things of the future, weapons of the future. We didn't have them yet, but they were theoretically possible. And at the time, the Department of Defense, the particular agencies, the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, they were working in the labs, weapon labs were working on some of these things before they were stopped by politics.
Right. So, assuming if I were in any of the intelligence agencies, this is how I'd operate. And I know this doesn't happen because this, you've already told us this. But if I was running an intelligence agency, I'd go, hypersonic weapons. When I first learned about it, I go, okay, where do we stand on them, and where do our enemies stand on them? Where do our adversaries stand on them? And if we can develop it, they can develop it. I'm a firm believer that that if we can do it, someone else can do it. That if I have an idea, someone else might have the same idea. That's confirmed to me over and over again on Action Radio, things that I come up with and I think that are original. Someone says, yeah, I heard about that, or yeah, that sounds good, or I'll read another article, someone else thinks of it somewhere else in the world. It's like, interesting. So my contention is, if we can think of it, someone else can too. So the fact that these things are theoretically possible and that we're investigating whether they're actually practical would mean to me that China and Russia would be doing exactly the same thing. So I'd want to have our spies looking at their spies. I want to have our spies hacking into the Russian system that spies on China, hacking into the Chinese system that spies on Russia, because they're going to be spying on each other better than they're going to be spying on us. We're an open book. They would be spying us. I'd be watching our spies. I have our spies watching their spies in our country, watching what they're looking at, so then I'd know what they're interested in. I mean, this is how I would think, all right? And so if you think in terms of the, it's almost like either a racist or a supremacist attitude to think that we can think of things that they can't. That's just stupid. That's insane. That doesn't make any sense. People are intelligent all over the world. And if you assume that and you assume, evil motives by those that want to take over our country by building weapons that can affect us in a nuclear war, it makes sense that they would be looking into hypersonic weapons as much as we would once the concept is known that it exists. And so that's how I would think. I know that's exactly opposite of how they think, because they're on sort of an American supremacist, ideological, peace is wonderful, kumbaya attitude. But if you were aware of this in the 80s, wouldn't the intelligence community people that you know also be aware that we should be looking into who else is aware of these in the 80s? Wouldn't that make sense?
No, I agree with what you're saying. Okay. And that makes logical sense, but it doesn't make sense when you really understand the bureaucratic politics of how intelligence works. Okay?
Right. That's the problem.
We could talk about this on the whole show, but all right.
Make it simple. And then I have another question.
The intelligence agencies have clients, our clients, all right?
Oh, okay.
The Defense Intelligence Agency works for the Department of Defense.
Right.
That's why the Defense Intelligence Agency tends to be more alert to threats and is more, quote-unquote, conservative than CIA is, all right?
Hmm.
The CIA basically works for the State Department. That's their client.
That's what I was wondering.
So,
okay, that's
the
huge.
The CIA favors intelligence that favors arms control, all right? Because that's what the State Department does. That's their bread and butter. And so the CIA, contrary to what a lot of people think, will tend to be, quote unquote, threat busters. They're always trying to stop. Their preference is to stop the Pentagon from going ahead from developing something like a hypersonic weapons. If the State Department doesn't like that, and so they'll come up with a different interpretation of the intelligence, all right? Now, and here's, but the DIA, before you start thinking that they're the good guys, you know, the DIA, the kinds of threats that it's interested in are the kinds of threats that the Pentagon is interested in, because the Pentagon basically wants to do business as usual that it's familiar with. The Pentagon wants intelligence that says, we need a new, better, faster strategic bomber. You know, we need a better ICBM. We need a quieter, more capable ballistic missile submarine. These are things they're used to, okay? These are things they do. They, the Defense Department is connected to big defense contractors, your military-industrial complex, all right?
Right.
That
okay.
know how to build these things. And so there's billions and billions of dollars at stake in building these programs. Nobody is
even if they're obsolete, like aircraft carriers.
In something like EMP, for example.
Right.
It could render these things obsolete or change the game. And we don't know how to do that. We don't know how to build that. Where's the constituency in Congress to gin up a lot of money to build a super EMP weapon, for example, or hypersonic warhead that can threaten these missiles in their silos, you know, and do a surprise attack? The United States doesn't do surprise attacks anyway. So how are you going to sell that to Congress and the State Department especially? You know, and so that's how we end up with gaps, you know, because it doesn't work. It should work the way you were talking about. I mean, the way you are talking about it, in that logical way where you're thinking about, well, what is theoretically possible? And we should be, in fact, there are, and I'm not saying there aren't analysts that do that. I can remember, you know, there was a program that's called the Silver Bullet Program, all right, that would look at Russian efforts to develop exotic high-tech weapons that we called silver bullets, you know, something we hadn't thought of at all, but they could change everything, you know. And so there were people, there were heroic analysts that did that sort of thing, but, you know, it's not a career-enhancing thing to deliver bad news to either the State
That's how we get Mark Milley.
Department of Defense.
That's
yeah,
how Mark
you know,
Milley rises
I mean,
to the Joint Chiefs.
They'll nod
yeah.
and say, well, that's very interesting, you know, and thank you for the briefing, but, you know, but
if this wasn't so scary.
Come back and tell me what you know about the Russian strategic bomber program. You know, what are they doing there? You know, they're a lot more interested in that sort of thing. They're not interested in something that's going to upset the military-industrial complex apple cart.
Well, and are they more interested in wars like Afghanistan and sending in troops and boots on the ground? I hate that expression. But is it more the conventional warfare, like you say, business as usual, fighting the last war that generals do because that's all they know? They're not thinking in terms of satellite, hypersonic. You know, when you think about a hypersonic weapon, first of all, I want to know how fast hypersonic actually is. But the idea that a satellite can have a missile, you know, hypersonic is fast enough when launched from the ground. But hypersonic from satellite to ground is what, seconds? How fast is a hypersonic weapon? Maybe, you know, less than a minute?
Well, the minimum speed is, the minimum speed to be defined as a hypersonic weapon is Mach 5, five times the speed of sound.
Okay,
but
so
the Russians have got hypersonic weapons that can travel Mach 25, you know, 25 times the speed of sound.
Right.
That's what they've actually deployed. They've actually got hypersonic weapons deployed on their SS-19 ICBM, and they're deploying more of them. It's not so much the speed because an ICBM – traveling a ballistic trajectory. I mean, they both travel about, you know, at top speeds around 15,000 miles per hour, you know. But the difference is that a hypersonic weapon flies a flat trajectory and skims along the atmosphere. So it doesn't have to travel a long arcing trajectory. And so it gets there a lot faster because it's, because it's flying
it's
a flat trajectory.
Not parabolic, right? Yeah, okay.
That's right. So if you're taking, so it has a much shorter distance to travel, and and it has the other advantages because it's maneuverable. It means it's harder or impossible to shoot down for our current defenses, harder to see because it's surrounded by a plasma envelope as it skims along the top of the atmosphere.
Define that.
And,
define plasma envelope. What is that?
Well, when you're traveling 15,000 miles per hour and skipping along, you know, the when the
like shockwaves,
the astronauts would come back from the moon and they're
right.
and they're reentering the fiery uh-huh. reentry. That's because when you're traveling at really high velocity, you know, you get it catches the atmosphere on fire and you're surrounded by an ionized plasma cloud from the friction with the atmosphere because you're traveling at such a high velocity.
Okay.
And you know, we wouldn't have, for example, and they would go into, I guess if you watch that Tom Hanks movie, for example, there's that about Apollo 13,
mm-hmm.
and they can't communicate. There was always that time when during reentry, because they're surrounded by that plasma cloud, that you know, they couldn't have radio communications. You couldn't
right.
speak with them. Well, it's the same thing with radar, you know. The radar will bounce off of the perimeter of the cloud, and you can't
okay.
precisely locate where this thing is inside the cloud, you know.
Huh.
So that's an additional complicating factor in terms of being able to locate this and the rest. But I've always thought the most important part of the hypersonic warheads is the accuracy. You know, people don't talk about that much, but that's really revolutionary. The fact that you basically have almost a zero CEP, you know, it combines the speed of a, it's faster than a ballistic missile warhead and
mm-hmm.
as accurate or more accurate than a cruise missile, you know, so you can put this thing through a bedroom window if you wanted to.
At 15,000 miles an hour.
Right. And that means that you can do a kinetic kill, you know, you practically, or you can lower the yield, you know, to destroy the targets to almost nothing, you know, one kiloton,
yeah.
you know, delivered with that kind of a precision would destroy anything. So that's going to be revolutionary. But but if this was done the way
yeah.
you were talking about, and we said,
uh-huh.
you know, we need to be prepared, you know, if we can imagine it, our scientists can imagine it, and mm-hmm. we need to encourage, that's the other problem. You know,
yeah.
we need to encourage our scientists to think creatively like that. I've
mm-hmm.
talked before on your show about when it comes to our nuclear scientists. For a long time, you know, Congress, after the Cold War, passed a law called the Spratt-Firth Amendment. It was an amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act, and it made it illegal for our nuclear weapon scientists to even think about new nuclear weapons of new design, you know, because we wanted to – this was during the Clinton administration. They wanted to end the nuclear arms race. They didn't want – the labs coming up with any new nuclear weapons, you know, advanced technology nuclear weapons, even in their minds. And so it was basically a prohibition on even thinking about these things. And the labs now under the Bush administration,
mm-hmm.
that the Spratt-Firth Amendment was lifted, all right, but the lab lawyer, but Congress never took the next step, which is what they had to do. And said, what they needed to do to correct this was to pass a bill that would say you are directed to be thinking about nuclear weapons of advanced design. Because to this day, you know, the lab lawyers, you know, don't want anybody, you know, violating Spratt-Firth, even though it doesn't exist anymore. Just because the law has been lifted, it created a habit of mind in the labs, where they're very nervous about doing that, about coming up with nuclear weapons of new design. So that puts us at a huge disadvantage. That's another example of how we end up shooting ourselves in the foot, you know, because of, in effect, a misguided faith in arms control, a misguided faith in assumptions of arms control, that if the United States sets a good example and we don't test nuclear weapons for 30 years and we don't design any new nuclear weapons for 30 years, Russia and China will follow our good example. And there's enough fools in the government to believe that that was true. You know, it wasn't until, you know, last year that the Department of State finally admitted that Russia's been cheating on the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty for 30 years. And so has China, you know. So a little late to be telling us that, you know, but anyway, that's how Washington works.
Actually, how Washington doesn't work. But that is absolutely yes. fascinating. That is a huge insight. I think the most staggering thing you said, and the big question I had is in the initial part of our discussion, is does the CIA have their own intelligence department? Because it seems like they're acting it, and they're doing everything possible to hurt this country. I mean, they're actively working against our own interests. So I question who they actually do serve, unless they're all globalists in the State Department. But the CIA connection I've never heard before. So that's new news to me. In fact, Lita and Gene, if you guys want to comment on this as well, feel free. But then so should we not have an antitrust breakup of the intelligence communities and get them out from under the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, so they can have individual assessments? That would make more sense to me.
My old boss at CIA, I served under four or five different directors, and I thought the best was a Democrat, a guy named Ambassador Jim Woolsey. You know, he's the only one that would actually come down and be really interested, you know, in the data. And he became a fellow activist on EMP and is still a good friend, but Jim always against the establishment of the DNI in the first place. And I agree with him. The DNI was established as one of the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. People wanted to know, well, how come we had this huge intelligence failure in the 9/11 that resulted in 9/11? And one of the reasons is because the intelligence agencies are so hostile to each other that they don't share data. They don't talk. And there's also legal reasons for that, for example. Yeah. I mean, the FBI, for example, is very leery about talking to the CIA because the CIA is a foreign intelligence agency. Constitutionally and legally, it's not supposed to get involved in U.S. domestic affairs. Now, we know that that has changed, right? But that's how it was. That's theoretically how it's supposed to be, and so they're for these reasons, or at least. That's a rationalization they had. You know, there's a deeper reason, which is simply that these bureaucracies hate each other and they compete with each other. And I remember, when I was at the agency, I have to be careful, okay, here, but I'm not talking about sources and methods now, but this is a cultural phenomena. You know, I was always struck at the language that analysts would use in describing the Defense Intelligence Agency versus the Soviet Union. All right. I was really kind of always appalled that the Defense Intelligence Agency, there was a visceral dislike and hatred of the Defense Intelligence Agency over at the CIA, you know, more so than there was toward the Soviet Union. You know, the Soviet Union was, everybody knew that was the threat and that was our job. But the real enemy and the bowels of the CIA was not the Soviet Union. It was the Defense Intelligence Agency, their great rival. And, that's one of the reasons these organizations didn't work together. And frankly, they still don't work together. The DNI didn't solve that cultural problem, but it was supposed to. It was supposed to knock their heads together, make them work together, make them share intelligence. And it just made matters worse. At least when you had these agencies were more or less independent, you had more diversity of opinion. You know, CIA and DIA would disagree with each other. NSA would disagree with both of them. And you had some diversity of thought, you know, because you had three different corporate views or more. Each of the services also has their own intelligence agency, and of course, the Navy and the Air Force and the Army all have their own particular take on these things that tends to favor their own bureaucratic interests when it comes to interpreting the intelligence. So you would have some greater diversity the way the system used to work. But when they established the DNI, not only don't they still share intelligence the way they're supposed to, but now we've lost the little diversity of thinking there used to be, you know, under the old system, and it's made matters worse. You know, DNI should be abolished. A colleague of mine, Fred Fleets, who was the chief of staff of Trump's National Security Council has actually written about this, and he has urged the abolishment of the DNI. And the DNI was one of the locuses of this coup attempt against President Trump. You know, I think that that's another thing that endangers the republic. You know, when you do get all these guys, you know, working together, you know.
Well, that was what General Michael Flynn was supposed to say, wasn't
that,
it? Wasn't Michael Flynn supposed to be the DNI, Director of National Intelligence?
He was, or National Security? He was supposed to be the National Security Advisor. He was supposed to be Trump's Chief National Security Advisor.
Okay.
But he had been the director of DIA, and that was his, you know, the basis of his expertise, and why he was qualified to be the National Security Advisor, you know. But if you're going to have these huge, powerful intelligence agencies, it's probably safer for the republic that they don't like each other and they compete with each other and they don't trust each other, you know. When you turn them into a single block of power, that becomes very dangerous for our republic and our constitution. You know the founders. But we're getting far afield, and I'd like to talk about the main thing I had wanted to talk about today. Something.
Yeah, we got 14 minutes left, and I've got a 2 minutes. Thing I have to play for one of our sponsors, so we get about 12 minutes. So let's get to the main topic, and if we have to continue it next time, I'll leave you to it, and I'll tell you when I have to go to a break, and we'll see how far we can get in the topic. Yeah, this has been fascinating.
All right,
your stories are better.
Well,
than
we're talking
than the
about
information.
How does the United States get into these situations, and we're about to get into these. While China has taken a great leap forward, you know, by demonstrating the combination of a fractional orbital bombardment system with hypersonic glide vehicle technology, we're about to take a great step backward, I think, in terms of our defense capabilities because of something that President Biden did at the June summit with Vladimir Putin. When he met with Putin, he agreed to establish... He basically walked into an arms control trap. Putin set an arms control trap for him. You know, Putin's an old KGB agent, and boy, does he know how to play us, certainly the Biden administration. And a lot was made of the joint statement that Biden and Putin made about how that both sides supposedly agree in principle that a nuclear war cannot be won and must never be fought. Okay, that was a joint public statement they made. And, you know, you may ask, what harm can there be in that? You know, don't we want the Russians to think that a nuclear war cannot be won and must never be fought? So isn't it good to have Putin saying that? Well, it's not good to have Putin to have a joint statement like that because the Russians don't believe a word of that. You know, they're actually preparing to fight and win a nuclear war. And they know that when you make joint public statements like that, it feeds and empowers all the anti-nuclear activists in the West, okay, and gins them up to then oppose our, not only our, but the British and the French nuclear modernization programs. Why are we wasting all this money on nuclear weapons when a nuclear war cannot be won and must never be fought, right? You know, here's a golden opportunity with such benign language for us to solve all our problems with Russia through arms control. And that's exactly what Putin wanted. That's what he wanted to think. And the next thing that happened at the Geneva summit, and this is the bigger, more important thing, and it could be our doom, is this thing called the Strategic Stability Dialogue that's been started, and that's going to go on behind the scenes, where Russia and Washington, the State Department, are going to be talking about new arms control adventures and how can we achieve strategic stability so that we can avoid a nuclear war in the future. That's the putative purpose of the Strategic Stability Dialogue. And what's wrong with that? Isn't that a good thing? Well, we're really suckers when it comes to arms control, all right?
Yeah.
Albert Einstein said, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. You know, Russia has achieved nuclear superiority over us. They've got strategic superiority right now, a vast strategic superiority because of arms control. We've talked on your show about how they are in violation of the Presidential Nuclear Initiative, and now they have a 10-to-1 advantage in tactical nuclear weapons, how they've been cheating on the INF Treaty. Okay, so they have this whole category of intermediate-range missiles for making nuclear war against NATO, and we don't have anything like that, you know, because they've been cheating on that. We talked about how they've been breaking the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty for 30 years, and they have all these advanced technology nuclear weapons, and they're probably even in violation of the New START Treaty. That's the last treaty that you know, the State Department still insists that they're in compliance with it. But the verification provisions are so bad that basically it's hard to tell whether they are or not. But one of the experts on arms control and nuclear strategy that I respect most, a guy named Dr. Mark Schneider, and others have made a compelling case that Russia is violating the New START Treaty and has probably got a 2-to-1 advantage over us, at least in strategic nuclear weapons. So what's the point of getting into another dialogue with Russia about future arms control treaties as the means of arresting their massive buildup of nuclear weapons that's threatening us when they have cheated on all the arms control treaties? You would think that we would have taken from that lesson that arms control doesn't work, that it just makes us more vulnerable. And therefore, what we need to do is follow the Reagan formula. And Biden had that opportunity to do that. He could have confronted Putin in Geneva and said, I'm going to pursue the policy of peace through strength, dictator Putin. We're going to build up our nuclear deterrent so that it's second to none, so that it's at least as good as yours. You know, I don't want to engage in a nuclear arms race, but you have left us no choice because of what you are doing. I think that's what he should have said. But he didn't say that. Instead, he's turned it into, I think, the nuclear equivalent of Munich by basically hoping that Putin will play ball on arms control in the future when he hasn't played ball on arms control in the past and obeyed the rules. Yeah. Now, it gets worse. The person who's in charge on our side of the strategic stability dialogue is a State Department person I've mentioned in the past on this show. Her name is Wendy Sherman.
Yep.
You know, before Wendy Sherman, you know, became the leading person on arms control, nuclear arms control negotiations in the Department of State, you know, before she did that, you know, before she entered the Clinton administration, she's basically been in state on and off since the Clinton years. Whenever the Democrats come in power, they bring Wendy Sherman back. Who is Wendy Sherman? Wendy Sherman has no educational background on nuclear weapons and strategy. She's not a scientist. She's not a physicist. She's not a military person. She's a social worker. She was the director of the Office of Child Welfare in Maryland, in the state of Maryland. And she was the director of Emily's List, which meant she was, you know, this is an organization that supports the election of women who support abortions. And that made her tight with Hillary Clinton. So she became a friend of Hillary Clinton. And as a consequence of that, she got brought into the Clinton administration in the State Department. And one of the first things that she was given, jobs she was given, was negotiating Clinton's agreed framework with North Korea. And we know how that worked out. Mm-hmm. You know, so basically, Wendy Sherman's negotiation with North Korea resulted in paving the way for North Korea to become irreversibly a nuclear weapons state. And then she was brought back in the Obama administration to lead the negotiations on the Iran nuclear deal, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which is also catastrophic and has paved the way for Iran to become a nuclear weapons state, if it's not already a nuclear weapons state, which is what I think it is. And now she's in charge of the strategic stability dialogue with Russia at this pivotal, crucial moment in our history when we can't afford one more treaty that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You know, the balance has shifted so dangerously against us that we can't afford another screw-up like Russia cheating on the INF treaty or the New START treaty, the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. You know, there's only so many failures you can take before you put yourself in danger of nuclear annihilation. And she's in charge of this.
Unless now, that's what they want. You know, I hate to say that, but unless, you know, why would Biden give Russia the pipeline and cancel ours? Why would Obama give nuclear weapons to Iran? Why did Bill Clinton give North Korea all the technology and money to build their own nuclear weapons under some, you know, Atoms for Peace, some, you know, energy program? Because they want them to have them. See, there's two ways to look at the world, and we've talked about this before, incompetence and design. And I'm fully in favor of however bad it looks, it's by design. You know, the reason they brought 100,000 Afghanis but you know what's fascinating is the people that come to the show from Washington, you, Claire, Jonathan Mosley, are much more disposed to the incompetence theory, and those of us outside Washington are much more disposed to the design theory. And it's really quite fascinating, and I'm wondering if there's like sort of a subtle unconscious influence of being around these people that, to me, what looks like design. It looks like design that 100,000 Afghanis were brought here on purpose because there's a new State Department person selected by, you know, insurrectionist Biden to handle the resettlement. Well, it's never supposed to be a resettlement program. You know, they don't talk about it, the Biden surrender, but we do. I think this is all intentional. I think it's an Obama administration third term effort to disarm this country and, you know, make us vulnerable to the point where we can be easily blackmailed. We can be taken over without a nuclear war. They don't have to beat us in a nuclear war. They just have to have enough weapons to do it. And in effect, we're going to be blackmailed by our own leftist Marxists who want us to be subservient to a different order and remove, you know, what you so really described as you know, supremacy. When they talk about white supremacy, you made this argument that was absolutely brilliant, that it's the supremacy of ideas, the supremacy of the individual, the supremacy of the thought that God gave us our rights rather than government. You know, that's what they're trying to destroy. And the way they do this, they believe their own propaganda. They believe that the world will be a better place without the United States. They're designing a system to disarm us, to make us so vulnerable to the weapons that these other countries have that we couldn't possibly win a nuclear war or even defend ourselves, leaving us no choice but to surrender. That's where I think they're going with this.
Well, you and I are probably in agreement in terms of the bigger picture. Okay. We're probably in disagreement about to what extent – this design is the consequence of the evil genius of an idiot like Wendy Sherman. I mean, when you actually meet these people, you know, have the opportunity to meet these people,
mm-hmm.
you'd be disappointed at how stupid they are. You know, if you're looking for the Moriarty, okay, the great Marx, a Lenin, you know, the great evil genius, a Hitler, the great evil genius, okay? You're not going to find it in the Wendy Shermans or the Joe Bidens, my friend. I do agree that there's a design here, but it's a design not of their making. It's a design that evil geniuses put in place in our university system, in our foundations, you know, in a lot of our bureaucracies, you know, where an alien ideologies have been successfully penetrated into our system, you know, partially as a consequence, only partially as a consequence of the actions of hostile foreign actors, I believe. But I also think it's largely as a consequence of one of the vulnerabilities of democratic, free democratic systems. You know, there is a, our kind of system, it thrives on intellectual faction. And there's a time when that's good, you know, like in the 19th century and maybe the early 20th century, you know, but at some point, you know, there's a great book by a brilliant person I used to know when I was young. And I think I may have mentioned him, a guy named Erich von Kunnel Ledin. He was an Austrian philosopher and, you know, a really important influence in the founding of conservative thought. And I was just rereading his book, Revolt of the Masses. And he talks about these inherent vulnerabilities. I mean, he was writing back in the 40s and 50s, all right? And he talks about these inherent vulnerabilities in free systems and how they have a tendency eventually to self-destruct because you have a faction that arises, usually in the universities, you know, which are always opposed to the values of the masses, the values of the larger society. They want to be bohemian. They want to be cutting edge, you know.
Right.
And they tend to be totalitarian. They tend to eventually to become totalitarian in their views, because they have such contempt for the civilization that makes their lives possible. You know, they like to end up. They're jealous of the power that government has, and they would like to be the ones in power, and they end up using their pulpit as a means of getting that power, and eventually produce generations of students who share their values and their perspectives. And he was writing about how the Nazis came to power and how the communists came to power. But he was also warning he could see, you know, just like William F. Buckley could see in God and Man at Yale, you know, the beginnings of this totalitarian threat to our system, even in the 50s, you know? And I think that's where it comes from. And, you know, the...
And I got to hold you up. We're out of time.
Wendy Sherman thinks she's a good person. Wendy Sherman, I'm sure, thinks that she is serving, just like Obama, thinks he's serving a larger patriotism, that they're a citizen of the world, that that people like you and me are troglodytes because we think in nationalist terms. And we're not on the cutting edge of where humanity is going. You know, we're an obstacle to be overcome because of our outdated ideas, you know.
Yeah.
That's
going to have to hold you up.
Nationalism is the thing that makes wars happen. And we've got to take chances in this. We've got to take chances to combat climate change and the nuclear threats.
We're out of time.
And that's how they think of themselves. And that's how, pardon me?
We're out of time. We have to stop.
Okay.
We literally have to stop. Let's pick it up next time. But this has been fascinating.
Yeah, let's pick it up next week because there's things coming that are going to come out of this dialogue that are really going to put us in the crosshairs in a bigger way than anything we've talked about so far. But to be continued next week.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it. Dr. Peter Pry, and I apologize to Eric Hawley, who I neglected to play our commercial for, so I'll give you a quick announcement. His phone number, 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. You can reach him at eric@bsmallbusiness.com. That's eric@bsmallbusiness.com. And he is our new webmaster extraordinaire and marketing guru, and like I say, I'll make sure I play this tomorrow. But that's who also is doing some amazing work with us as well. So, Dr. Pry, thank you. Thank you to Lita and Gene, and anybody else associated with the show here today. And Bumberjack, yes, even you two for your comments. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock Central, 7 o'clock Eastern, and the rest of the time zones. You guys figure it out. I'll see you then. BlogTalkRadio.com/citizenaction. That's where you find us. Bye now.